Blog Talk Radio.
August the 9th, 2013, and this is The Last Word. I'm Michael Lawson, along with Thomas Fortberry.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing? That was just the combined introduction to a fabulous musical that I went to at the Booth Theater. You missed it.
I did indeed.
Of Seussical the Musical.
By the way, this is a... Yes. Performance by the Nota School of Arts here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
That's right.
Want to explain a little bit about Nota?
Well, we're going to go into that whole thing in the next hour, and we're going to have a lot of music from the Seussical the Musical. We're going to have a lot of interviews with people that were there. It was packed every single night. Is that me?
No, this is the New York Police.
New York Police. Okay, well, we're going to hear that, too. But anyway.
We were having a little stop and frisk moment there.
And we're also going to be talking to the Mecklenburg County Chair, Robin Bradford, and Corinne Mack, who's a Democratic person.
One of our party leaders. Activists out there.
Activists. And we're also going to have, in the last hour, we're going to go into A-Rod.
Oh, no.
Bonds, all that stuff that's going on with that anti-aging biogenetics. Yeah, we're going to talk about that because I think I might want to do that myself.
Who would have thought baseball is now bioengineering? Who would have thought?
They've been bioengineering football for years.
Yep.
You know, but baseball is the only sport that doesn't allow it.
Well... That's because...
Baseball is the American pastime.
Not even.
Oh, yeah. Baseball is still the American
football,
pastime.
It's okay to have two mountains slam into each other.
Oh, okay, right.
But
right.
On the baseball field,
right.
Mountainous people get in the way. You can't
yeah, well,
see
that's
defense.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But I want to know, what the heck did the Olympic Committee do? When did they know that the Russians did not allow gays in their country? They found they lock them up, throw them in jail. And yet they're making a big deal about Russia, not the Olympic Committee, but everybody else is making a big deal about Russia having the Olympics when they don't allow gays. Well, and they don't allow, what was the other thing they didn't allow, gays and... Something they were. Anyway,
freedom of speech.
One of those things. But anyway, they didn't allow it during the Summer Olympics in Beijing. They didn't allow it then. And who the hell watches the Winter Olympics? I mean, come on, give us a break. Maybe this is just to get some publicity. Tell everybody there's going to be a Winter Olympics. I mean, why are we complaining about the Russians? When the Chinese, who own half of the United States, had a major, major, major event in the Summer Olympics, which is the Olympics.
Right.
I mean, I remember the Greeks ever having bobsledding. You remember that?
Yeah.
Did they have bobsledding? I don't remember them jumping off mountains. No?
It's spinning in circles on high school.
Right. So,
here's the thing, though, Mike. I think you touched on it just then when you said... Who actually owns America? It's kind of sad. But the difference between China and Russia is that China right now is the ascendant bank of
America. Ascendant bank, right.
And you can't complain about who's paying the bills. So there was nothing really said or made. Now, they did complain about things like the fact that you couldn't breathe. You know, that was a little minor issue. You remember that for a while. They had to end up, you know, turning off every factory in China just to scrub the air enough to have the athletes not die on the field.
No, but that's not pollution, is it? Was that polluting the air?
Things like running over students with tanks in Tiananmen Square or, you know, beating gays.
Well, the Russians had tanks.
Yeah, but they didn't mention any of that, if you didn't. Like you said, that wasn't really brought up with the China games.
No.
But here we are, you know, because, like I looked this up.
Yep. Because?
They did change some things. 1997, China decriminalized homosexuality. It is no longer a major crime. They did alter that. And in 2001,
I wonder how many more in
the
Politburo.
Mental laws, the mental diagnosis, it is no longer listed as an official mental disorder. It used to be.
Oh, so I mean you could be mentally ill and
so now
go to prison for the rest of your life.
They now accept that you can be gay and it isn't a thing. So there, it may have been enough of a change in that status that they got away with, you know, their oppressive.
Okay, well that
but
the,
I think
some
really,
2001 they had the
yeah.
Oh, was it when did they have the liberties?
It was just a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah.
So
okay, right.
This was before that.
Okay.
But, so they do have a little bit of liberalization there. However, they are a dictatorship. We know that up, down, and sideways.
We have our man doing the...
Oh, yeah, our man. And,
let me shut the door
at
here.
At least the studio has great landscaping. Now, the difference, I think, to be honest, there's a two-way difference. Russia is our long-term, you know, hangover Cold War enemy.
Yep.
So everything they do, we always complain.
Well, then the president is making his conference is right now. His first one is April, and we got to record it because I am.
Because I'm sure he's talking right now about canceling the meeting with Putin.
I'm sure he's talking about his dinner that he had last night with his wife. They went out to dinner.
Yeah.
She looked gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous sleeveless gown.
When has she?
Oh, my gracious. Anyway.
But I think that's the thing. I think it's more of a stigma, you know, with Russia. We're going to complain about anything they do. Whereas, you know, if, you know, Korea or you know, Czechoslovakia or something, so we probably wouldn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's Russia, we always complain. And on top of that, I don't know what's going on, but I think a little bit behind the scenes right now with the whole Snowden thing. And the, you know, Putin also just passing this law directly right now, not as opposed to it's been on the books for 50 years type thing. I think it's just there is all that tension and stick in the eye of Obama that's kind of pissing him off, to be honest. I think that's why they're making such a stink of it right now with Russia. It's not that it's, you know, every communist nation and every dictatorship for that matter has been against, you know, homosexuality and against, you know, Jews and against, you know, everything else since the beginning of time. But I think the difference is the timing and the Snowden effect because we're having a little diplomatic war with Russia right now.
Well, on my Twitter account, just got a memo from the White House will release more material and legal memos on the spying program. So
here's something I wish they would do. We've known about the program for decades.
Yep.
We, because of the threat of lawsuits and the revelations of how extensive and at that time completely illegal the mass data collection was, we legalized it all with the Patriot Act. For good or bad. You know, I was 100% against it. I think it should be repealed. I think it's one of the worst pieces of legislation ever. However, it's passed. Okay.
That's right. And why?
So it's over. We don't need to talk about it.
Oh.
This is why I can't stand that Obama's.
Wait a minute. Why can't we talk about it? We're talking about Obamacare.
No, that's
and that's a constitutional amendment passed already.
Well, yeah, I know that. And so is this law. So, again.
No, it wasn't constitutional.
No, this is made constitutional by the Patriot Act. All this.
The Patriot Act has not been brought to the Supreme Court yet.
Well, that's true. It won't be, I guarantee you, because it's unconstitutional.
Well, because the only people that have to do it is you or me. He goes, do you think the government's going to do it? Don't think so.
Okay. They would fight that tooth and nail. You would never see
and it. I don't have $50 million to bring it to court.
Mm-hmm. But here's the deal.
Yeah.
I think because I don't know why. Well, I do know why. Okay, so Obama being in office, they are trying
wait
to
minute, wait a minute.
Everything.
You just missed this.
What?
What you just said about the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
Obama has just said, let's reform part of the Patriot Act. He's referring to 215, a records provision that has been used for wide record requests.
Okay. Well, good.
So that's what we were just saying, right?
Yes. That's fine.
And 215 is the one that allows all this. 215 is the one that allows you to get all the records, save them, put them in a diary storage base.
Right.
Without any reason.
Exactly. And the thing is, they say, you know, they just record mass data so that they can only record it for a little while, by the way. They say
right.
Don't retain it forever. But then if anything happens, they go through and
pull
it.
Well, see, but here's the thing. Yes, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to supervise it and make sure it's done?
But look, this is...
Duh.
But here's the problem.
What are you talking about here?
Just like we were talking about New York earlier,
right.
With the stop and frisk.
Right.
You know, one of the revelations that came out of New York, besides the fact that, you know, that is a law. They passed it. But it's totally
is it a law?
Isn't it a law? Isn't it a,
no.
I thought it was a, one there.
No.
Changes. Okay. So
it's not a law.
It's just a policy.
Right.
Okay. But nevertheless, it's one of their official policies they're acting on. But this is a something I think is blatantly unconstitutional. You shouldn't be doing it. But it's a official policy. It's being done right now. So there's not much you can do about that. I hope they do reform things, but. As long as these things are legal, as in the Patriot Act and recording Americans, they need to quit complaining about it. And the Republicans need to quit being so two-faced about things that they're attacking Obama constantly and pretending like they didn't know that, you know, they were collecting data on Americans, like gasp. Oh, my gosh, they're recording citizens.
Mitch McConnell knew. The Republicans on the Intelligence Committee knew.
It isn't that they knew. Not only do they know, they freaking passed the law.
They
wrote and passed the law.
Every single congressman who is involved with that signed a signature, and it was okay by the Senate. The Senate okayed it.
Yes.
I mean, what are we talking about?
Only so, listen, the USA
Patriot Act. I think there's only like 5 or 6 people that were voting against it.
And the go back and look at the record. USA Patriot Act was passed and later amended. Solely in response to all the complaints about
absolutely
being caught doing this. You remember they were being caught, and at the time, AT&T and all was going to be sued in the ground because they were found to be recording all the phone calls.
Right.
So they put in those provisions. You couldn't even sue a company, for instance. And you admit it.
You
remember,
can't
you
sue it, AT&T, right.
You remember they even made it retroactive to the law so that they couldn't be sued
for
their past actions before the law passed. So that was its whole purpose. So they knew from the get-go, and I'm tired of hearing about it. What they're doing now is playing politics, and that's exactly the same thing that's happening. And we'll get into this real quick because you said we may not have time for it, so I'll just cover it real quick. Exact same thing happened in Benghazi is happening right now with the embassy closings. Okay? And they're directly related. Directly related. I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because of Benghazi. He got, you know, he's been beat up repeatedly, and they've been trying to use that, of course, as a huge club on Clinton so that they can destroy.
I'm going to last guy. He is that?
Yeah.
All right, you know, it's coming from, we got a big storm coming here.
Yep.
It's coming from Atlanta.
But that's fine.
I hope that's not.
So
that's not
the Republicans have been using this just to beat up on Clinton's reputation and, you know, trying to make the State Department look bad, trying to make her tendency there somehow illegal and immoral and evil, and you know, all they did was, you know, kill all those great Americans and stand by gleefully while, you know, terrorists raided through, you know, in Libya or something. It's all crap. But look at what it causes. Look at the damage. The damage is in response to that, because, you know, we've had now official investigations in Congress. You know, we've had endless nights worth of Fox News and everything else.
Oh, did
it
show up anything? Did anything show up?
No.
Why were you?
No, they've never done it. But they've had endless investigations and calls for impeachment and everything else because of Benghazi.
Well,
so now, in response to that, when they had a threat from the Yemen branch of Al Qaeda.
Now they're saying
an overly cautious thing, and they said all the embassies in the Middle East around Yemen were going to close because they threatened a major event on a U.S. embassy. So overabundance of cautious now because of Benghazi, because of getting beat up for years in the press now. They say, okay, we're going to close it. Now they turn around and say, oh, he's a wimp. He closed everything.
Dead.
You know, yeah, he's scared. Right. So it's a you can't win situation. But this is exactly what the Republicans are causing.
He won.
No, I know. But listen.
And you don't give a damn what they think now.
No, I know that. But listen, we would not have closed all those national embassies all across the
world
unless they had made this huge
This has to be a bigger threat than Benghazi.
It doesn't matter. It's also a reaction to it.
Right.
Because, you know, they didn't close Benghazi and do all these other things ahead of time when they were getting the little threats there, and then it turned into a little disaster. So now they go, okay, we got a threat. We're going to close everything. And then they go,
oh, you close everything?
You know, so it's, again, it's just playing this game of no matter what he does, he's always wrong and he's to blame. But that's why.
Well, he's the black guy. They can blame him.
Of course.
Now,
you know what? Being a black guy, and I saw him, by the way, driving that big limo. Obviously, black guys can't have nice cars. You better stop and frisk that guy.
Well, yeah.
He might be a drug dealer.
Now,
I'm just saying.
And is he allowed to have all those guys in the back with those big guns?
Exactly. Looks like a mob guy.
Looks like a mob. Okay. I think they need to stop them all.
I think, what's the term? Gangstar.
Gangstar. Yes.
It was no E-R. Just
well,
A.
Well, we got a few chicks because we're expecting the chairman of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, Robin Bradford, to come on.
All right.
And Corinne Mack. I want to reach out. Yeah, hey, we're going to switch local politics here. I just have to read it. Last week I had on.
By the way, we're talking about North Carolina. Local.
This is local politics, North Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We're broadcasting from live with a beautiful tree lit backyard and plants out in the deck because my wife afraid of bugs.
Hey,
but anyway.
Just to tell you before we get in there, I just want to tell everybody, if you go to the ACLU website, they have a whole nice article on why Section 215 of the Patriot Act needs to be reformed.
Oh, we're going to talk about that after our interview. We need to talk about this.
Go to the ACLU website.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
We need another mayor because Anthony Fox, who did a fabulous job running the convention for the Democratic Party here.
Yeah, and running our city.
And running our city is now the transportation
Secretary of the United States.
Woo!
Way to go, Mr. Fox.
So we have Patsy Kinsey from District 1. She is now the temporary mayor. She will not run for the position. And the mayor pro tem, Patrick Cannon, is running for the position. And I guess James Smudgy Mitchell, who's on the city council also.
Name?
Yeah.
Mayor Cannon.
I mean, that sounds pretty awesome.
And this is other guy. Now,
and by other guy,
I am reading this verbatim, so don't think I added anything into this.
So we did not make this up.
Charlotte Observer, this was, I think, Thursday or Wednesday. It says, mayoral hopeful. I am the white guy. In an email, Dunn questions motives of Black Caucus invitation. Black Caucus is a nonpartisan organization here in Mecklenburg County. And they are involved with,
or politics.
Politics. Well, not really politics, because the problem is we don't know what they're involved with, but they're non-political. They're involved with this and that. They try to bring candidates in.
They try to do things for
the community.
Say it's one of those organizations that works for a certain constituent.
Right.
In this case.
Right. They're nonpartisan, so they're supposed to be giving Republicans and everybody else a good shot. Well, this is by Jim Moore, who I know. He's a great guy. He's the writer that wrote this. And I tell you, Jim Moore does not exaggerate. Okay, it goes like this. Charlotte mayoral candidate Gary Dunn has questioned the motives of Black political caucus and the sexuality of one of the Democratic rivals. In an email he said he sent to the media and 5,000 people. Dunn made
these comments.
Just 5,000.
Okay.
We have more than 5,000 people in Mecklenburg County, so I'm at a loss for that. But anyway,
he sent it to 5,000 of his closest racist friends.
Right. Dunn made the comment in response to an invitation to attend a caucus brunch and fundraiser next week. Fundraiser for Democrats. Maybe I got this wrong, he wrote, but you should know I'm not the black candidate, Patrick Cannon. I'm sorry. I messed that up.
Oh, way to go, Mike.
I messed up the punchline.
Just read it verbatim. It punches itself. I promise you.
He said, all right, I'll start low. He said, he sent this letter to the political caucus.
And this is because the political caucus has invited, as they do, all political candidates to come out.
Right.
So his response.
That a Democratic, they invite all, but Democratic candidates normally come. You normally get some Republican candidates, too. But anyway, he says, maybe I got it wrong, he wrote, but you should know I am not the black gay Patrick Cannon. I am the white guy.
Yeah.
If you are inviting me to hear my opinions, I would be glad to attend. However, it looks like you are just using the system to raise money and promote racial inequities. Charlotte Mayor Pro Tem, and the longest serving city council member, is saddened. He said, it saddened me that someone running for public office would demonstrate such divisive behavior, using inflammatory language and untruths to attack a family man and pervert servant leaders in this city. To this city shows. Dunn's true stripes. It shows Dunn's true stripes. I screwed this all up. Anyway, let me start off using inflammatory language and untruths to attack a family man and pervert servant leader to this city shows Dunn's true stripes. He said in a statement. Rather than engaging with him, I am going to focus on my energies on winning the primary. Cannon and Dunn are among four Democrats running for the mayorship in Charlotte. Some of the others are James Mitchell, Lucille Puckett, and he's a former authority commissioner.
Yep.
Now,
I just want to stress this. This is just these things happen every single year, all year long. You have to go to the church cookout. You have to go to the little old ladies reading group. You have to show up at the old age home. You have to show up at the zoo. You have to go, you have to pet the children and pet the pony and pet the plants at every single group.
That's right.
That's what you do as a politician.
Yep.
You have to go around and go, I'm your guy. Vote for me. So in a common event where they invite everyone to come out and explain why they need a vote, this guy turns around and says, hey, I got this wrong. You may not know this, but I'm not the black gay guy. I'm the white guy. Are you kidding me? And let's look at our calendars again. We're talking now, 2013. This isn't like 1963 or something. So I can't believe how emboldened the right wing has gotten with this resurgence.
But this man's a Democrat.
Yeah,
supposedly.
We know these Democrats.
Have never heard of them. Heard of him.
Exactly. And we encountered this before when we were running campaigns. You have these guys that show up and cross party lines and registers one thing, and so we know what this guy is. But here is a person in modern times, literally saying, hey, I'm the white guy. Why, I don't need to be there. I'm not black. And then, on top of that, I just pulled up this other one. This is Eyewitness News report on it. Furthermore, they called him to explain himself, right?
And
he says that he's no bigot.
Of course not.
And that he just believes that you shouldn't vote on anybody based on race and on their sex. And he says, I just love this. I would fight for every black person on the street. And I'd fight for every homosexual, even though I don't like them. You know,
even though I don't like them.
But I would go out there, this is what I love. I would go out there and kill them, or for them, to make sure that they got equal rights. Right, right.
He's going to kill
again,
for them.
Yeah, he's going, you know, again, let's see if we can bring a gun into this conversation. So then, again, he called him the black gay candidate. Okay? Now, we'll go ahead and go with the obvious part. Hey, the guy's African-American. Okay. Forget it. But Cannon's not even gay to begin with. It's just throwing out every inflammatory word.
I mean, how
and so Cannon has to come out and says, it saddens me that someone in running for a public office has to demonstrate this kind of behavior and say, speak these untruths about me, a family man.
Right. But here's the thing. He's not only offended the African-American community.
Yeah.
He's now offended the gay community.
Right.
You know when what? He says, I am not, I am the white guy, I am not gay, he sounds like white fans.
Yeah. And that's exactly
what a white fans.
When they call him up and ask him to offend him, his first words are, I'm not a bigot. Yeah. Hey, buddy, I'm sorry, but you can pretty much define bigot by what you say.
I mean, who is White Sands? The Russian? Oh, the Russian.
No.
The Republican.
That's Senator,
what's his name? Senator White Sands. Anyway,
yeah.
In the bathroom.
Yeah,
in the
airport bathrooms.
These
guys, though, they write their own jokes. You don't even have to try with these people. They're so pathetic. I just can't believe it.
Well, you know, see, the problem is, the word went out because a black person is now in the White House. Anybody can be in politics. You can be in any position. But you know what? You need $1 billion. That's what it cost him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have $1 billion, dummy.
Yeah, you know any billionaires?
I mean, give me a freaking break here. This man just says, I'm black, so I'm in the White House. It didn't happen like that. It cost $1 billion.
But it's also because he's in the White House that we're seeing this thing.
Of course.
I mean, these people are foaming at the mouth, running scared through the streets going, oh, my God, a black's in the White House. And they're desperate to stop any other black.
That's why they want to stop you from voting.
Exactly. That's why they just went through North Carolina and gutted our voting rights. I mean, they have restricted everything. You know what? This is a favorite one of mine. You know, in Texas, they're doing the same thing, right? They're gutting voter access, their voting rights, their everything. And they just passed, similar to us, a very restricted voter ID law because, you know, they use the same carbon copy crap, right? But this is the part that cracks me up. In the Texas law, they just passed. They said they get to, they have to have two forms ID to show up to vote, right? You can have a federal ID and a local ID. Only valid local IDs, driver's license, something like that, and a gun permit. You know what's invalid in Texas?
That a dollar store ID?
You know what's invalid in Texas now?
A police department ID.
Any form of educational ID from any institute of learning anywhere. Any
even
student
in Texas.
ID, anything. Yeah. With fully certified, fully paid for, with your picture, with your everything else, totally invalid. But a hunting license is valid ID enough. As long as you got a gun, show up. Vote.
Well, we have someone. I got to make sure this person on the phone's got an ID. And what is your name? Who we have on the phone? Hello there. Well,
hello.
Maybe they're listening and they need to
listen. Other
anyway,
phone candidate.
Other phone. Well,
so, again, we got this guy done. You know, his career is done.
His career is done.
Yes.
That's right.
But,
his career is done.
So we're down to this base level now. So we have an international city.
International city.
We have a city that is literally on the list now considering things like Olympics. They're considering things like Super Bowls. You know, they're doing everything they can. Charlotte has stepped up. You know, we did host, first time ever,
right,
Democratic National Convention.
That's right.
Things like that. We were, until, you know, the debacle, that was called the collapse of our economy.
That's
we
our
we
economy.
Were the second largest financial capital in the country, which
right.
means also hence on Earth. So we're a major city. And when you're talking about the mayor of said city running around going, I'm not the black guy, I'm not the gay guy, isn't that just horrific? Isn't that astounding?
Horrific is the word.
Yeah, it's just...
Well, you know...
I don't understand it. I don't know how we've gotten to this point.
What's to understand? Well, I mean, what's to understand? If you're black, you can't run for nothing. I mean,
yeah.
It's as simple as that.
And you know what? You can't even carry Skittles and walk back to your house.
Oh, well, that's another story that we'll get into. But one of them, the major things that we have here is to, I don't know who, I have somebody on hold, so I'll go back to him later. Yeah, but you can just listen if you want. Anyway, there are so many of them. But what was the thing we found out about New York City? There was an article. I heard it
MSNBC. I couldn't find it. I'm trying to look for it still. However, I did run across something that said they recorded the police talking about Stop and Frisk. And some of the leaders in the police department were called on tape saying the purpose of it was to instill fear in the black and brown community.
Was that shock and awe?
Yeah. Right?
Well, it's like shock and awe.
So, again, you have a policy that's broad. What we're talking about is the stop and frisk in New York City. So now we're not in North Carolina anymore.
Right.
Jumped up to New York City. But you're talking about a policy where they stop anyone, and the basis for stopping anyone supposedly is suspicion.
Hey, we have in Shaw, before we get to New York, I mean, I think they had over 1,500 incidents with the police. That only three
You're talking about our,
or four our went to a judge.
Right.
I mean, so 1,497
people are just
were good stop.
Yeah, they were just
they were good arrests. They were good shootings. I mean, nobody's 100% perfect, but they're trying to say that the Charlotte Mecklenburg police department is perfect. You know, I would love that if that was the case. And I would love that all 1,497 people that were stopped were doing something wrong. That would be wonderful. But, you know...
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
You know, they have a show on TV called... that I watch now called Continuum. It's on...
Well, here it is. I'm sorry. Let me look this up. So
okay.
I was trying to look it up on here and it hung. Who was this guy? What's his name?
He was an officer.
Oh, Ray Kelly. May have heard of him.
Yeah.
Commissioner
of New York City.
Commissioner Ray Kelly told New York State Senator Eric Adams.
Yeah.
This program is meant to instill fear in the black and Latino community.
Ray Kelly said
that? Quote, every time they leave their home, unquote. This is...
Now,
the commissioner himself,
liked Ray Kelly.
Yeah.
When he was, I mean, he's been there, because the other guy that was there, who's out in California now, then he went to Florida, retired, was a absolute racist. Ray Kelly never seemed like a racist to me.
Right.
But this is just outrageous.
And it's just sad.
And I can't remember.
Here's the thing.
I think it's from...
Senator Adams, in his defense, is trying to say this now. I don't know if you know if it's accurate or not, but he told the court when this came out that he was stunned by the commissioner's claims, and he immediately told him that he was very concerned, he was amazed, and he said, I think what you're doing is illegal. So in his defense, that's what the senator is saying about Kelly. But... it is shocking to me. Again, here we are, just like we're talking about our local mayor race, running around going, you're black, you're gay. Here we are, New York City, one of the premier cities on the earth. And we're sitting here with a commissioner who is so craven that he is... That's what he said. I want to, every time they walk out the door, instill fear in them. Is that America?
I mean to tell you, you know.
Is that the American dream?
It's just like having Darth Vader sitting over you.
Come over to the dark side. Oh, there you go with the dark side. Yeah, you know.
But anyway, The thing is that what we need to understand is that, and I'm trying to get the amount, but I believe it since Ray Kelly was there, Trace came in with our mayor, now Bloomberg. So I guess the year is 2004, there has been over 5 million stop and frisk
right.
in New York City.
And
I mean, that's more than most states have
population. Yeah. And look, here's the thing that's sad. This is from August 9th, 2013.
Right.
Y'all can look this up, This Week in Blackness, the magazine. However, Mayor Bloomberg himself, and this is sad, another salvo, this is, I'm reading direct from the article, okay. Another salvo has been fired in the siege on civil liberties of all people of color in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, Mayor Michael Bloomberg struck down by veto, so this isn't just a random act, by his official veto, he struck down two important measures that were meant to curtail the city's controversial stop and frisk law. Here's from Raw Story. Mayor Bloomberg called the bills dangerous and irresponsible and said that they would make the city less safe. One measure was created for an independent inspector general to monitor the police department and their activities. The other was for the expansion of the definition of racial profiling to allow people who have been pulled over and profiled to sue the police if they were done so, you know, wrongly, if they're not criminals. Bloomberg said this, he had to defend policing and that this is the wrong thing to do and it would free wrongdoers to do crime. So,
okay,
again,
well, that's
so,
an erroneous assumption and he's possibly assuming that because...
What he's doing is defending the police at any cost.
Because they then don't want people to be stopped because they're afraid to get sued.
Right.
Here's the problem with that. Okay.
Well, they said
you notice what he said, that he vetoed it.
Yes.
Because in New York City is an actual big boy government.
Right.
The mayor runs everything.
Yes. He's
the mayor,
actual mayor.
He's like the president of the United States. And under him, he has a city council of 15 members with a city council president.
Yeah. And by that, you mean he has more actual power than the governor of Texas. That's what you're saying.
He has as much power as the president of the United States has in his city. That's how big cities are run. Not like this city down here that has a out the lunch. Well, it's not as bad as Texas. I shouldn't say that. The mayor here has no powers. It's
right.
run by the city council and the county council.
Right, he's just a figurehead.
He's a figurehead. Now he does. He does all the greeting and everything else. And he has a couple of things he can do. But he's not like in New York City where you hang the person that's in charge. And I mean hang. That means you don't vote for him again. He's gone. He's washed up. He's finished. Because he controls the schools, the train stations, the trains, the buses, the police department, the fire department, sanitation department. So he has a lot of things that he can be hung out to dry for. He can't blame it on the city council. He can't blame it on the daggone anybody else, the district leaders.
Well, here's
here, you don't know who's on first or what's on second.
Yeah, well, it's all, you know, these.
Yeah, yeah, you don't know. It's
private.
Like, oh, look, that's not me. That's the Board of Education. No, that's not me. That's the daggone council. Oh, that's not me. That's the county commission. Oh, that's the city manager.
Let me tell you this looming battle that's happening in New York.
Yeah.
He said this act was the Community Safety Act, the one that had the two things, to have an oversight commission and to allow people to sue if there was wrongdoing.
Right.
That he vetoed. Okay. The New York City Council is the one
right.
who voted that in, sent
right.
it to him. They sent it with a 2/3 majority.
Yeah.
So that's able to override it.
That's right.
Now, he vetoed it. It goes back to them. To
still override.
To overtake. Now, but here's the thing. Because they said that they were going to override him, that they haven't voted yet, but they said they were going to.
He changed it.
Got mad. No. He's got mad. And he said, he announced today, Bloomberg himself said, I am calling every lawmaker on there to change their minds. And said the billionaire mayor has.
To buy the city and make it done. And make it so.
He is using his monetary and campaign contribution connections weight on them. And he said, everybody that votes against me, you got to think about this quote. We will see what I'm going to do. The bottom line is this. I make no bones about it. I'm telling you, I'm going to support those candidates who agree with me. Mm-hmm. And if you go against me, I will fight you. So he is throwing money and power against them.
Money talks and BS walks.
Yeah. So that tells you something, though, that this guy is willing to throw his entire mayorship on the illegal stopping and frisking of the entire black community, which the commissioner himself said is just to instill fear on people. That's pretty sad. It's pretty astounding.
But it shows you how a mayor that is a mayor can run the city.
Yeah, well, at least he doesn't make bones about it.
I mean,
and he's not hiding behind something.
He ain't hiding behind nothing. This, you know, you may disagree with him, but he don't pull any fast ones.
You
don't agree with me.
He ain't lying.
Don't worry. I'll buy you out. And if I can't buy you out, I'll buy the land out from under you.
Yeah.
So you'll just be standing on my land.
And then I'll buy the people that own the land. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, but again, hey, not to get into anything, but that right there, my friend, is the problem with money in our country. And that's why we need to get money out of politics. Because someone like that can outbuy an entire council of people who don't have money.
Well,
I don't think that's right.
I'm glad he's a Democrat and is able to buy out things. I mean, you know, we can't agree. Can't agree with everything.
True.
That someone we want office.
So hey, Mike, I have to say this because you go home all the time and you're a New Yorker. When you go home, enjoy that stop and frisk.
I've never been stop and frisk.
You know what? That wasn't the law then. We can change that, Mike.
But I don't make you one of the five million. I don't drive yellow sports cars or red sports cars either.
Hey, if you're smart, just stay on the subway and shut up.
Well, that includes the subway, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the subway has their own police.
Hey.
Of course, they all come under the commissioner, but the transit authority police.
I was just a poor Southern boy walking up there as a tourist. But when I was up there on the subway and all that kind of stuff, where the hell were the police? I was watching people, let's be kind, fornicate in corners. I was watching kids throw up in the middle of the car.
But you weren't robbed.
Where are any police?
You weren't robbed. I mean, they were throwing up because they were half drunk, either on pills or something else. But hey, if you got to do it,
I forgot to mention the people throwing up were white.
Forgot that.
Yeah.
Anyway, whoever was on the phone, you can call back if you want to give a talk here. But anyway,
we'd love to hear from y'all. By the way,
we're waiting for the chairman to come on because we're going to go musical, and you're going to have to squeeze it in somewhere, guys.
While you're looking at that screen there, because I don't have it on mine, why don't you tell all the fine folks out there what our number is? They can call
646-716-5242.
Because we'd love to hear your opinions. You know what?
Absolutely.
This is the point of this show. This show, we use a arcane thing called Word right in the title because we love the freedom of speech. We love to hear from everyone. We love to hear your opinions. That's what America is founded on. We love it.
There are some people in this world that are so screwed up. Now,
Ron, the guys that go, why are you inviting me? I'm the white guy.
Did you hear what Rand Paul's stupid, it's McConnell's stupid campaign manager said?
Oh, what now?
He was talking on the phone.
It's hard to keep up with him.
He was talking on the phone. Now, this is a campaign manager for Mitch McConnell. He was talking on a private call with a guy.
Mitch.
Now, he said, you know, I'm how's it going? He said, oh, listen, I'm holding my nose till 2016 so I can help Rand Paul be the next majority leader. This guy is working for Obama. He's not working for Obama. He's working for Mitch McConnell. He's the campaign chair. By the way, he's Ron Paul's son-in-law.
Hey, Mitch, how's
so,
that feel?
No, Mitch McConnell knows that, and he went to them, so he thought he could get the Tea Party people to
right.
help him win.
You see, he thought he was getting them all behind him, so he'd have their support tonight. Little did he know, behind him meant, is that a dagger in my back?
So
he says,
I'm holding my nose because of the stink until 2016. Now, then he came out and said, I thought this was a private phone call, and for anybody to start taping private, the guy taped it, the taping private phone calls is just highly unethical and unreasonable.
You know, I call that a patriotic act. Like,
like the 47%
recording American is as patriotic as you can get. We've got it in law. Don't you worry. Anybody who this day and age, especially those fools in Washington who sit up there with cameras on them 24/7, accepting millions upon millions upon millions of dollars from contributions everywhere, if they think they're not watched and recorded, are you kidding me? They've got to be idiots.
There's a thing here called presume guilty, and it shows.
Is that you mean liberals?
No, it shows Chief Justice Roberts coming out. Presume guilty, unequal cuts threaten equal justice. So it gets worse every day. This is coming out from MSNBC, their website, and it says that. In his unusual address about race relations after the George Zimmerman trial, President Obama recounted personal experiences when people thought he was dangerous or criminals because of his skin color. He was describing a social form of racial profiling of reactions to him based solely, instantaneously, on his race. Official practice, while widely condemned, actually remains legal under federal law and in 25 states. And in the wake of the president's remarks, there's a new push in Washington to ban racial profiling. Under Supreme Court precedent, race can be used as a factor in policing, providing that the authorities demonstrate it is relevant to specific law enforcement goals. And many states and cities maintain the option of profiling as a practice. Few apparently use it or admit to it. New York City runs a sweeping program that inspects predominantly young minority males. Last year, under the Stop and Frisk program, the NYPD conducted 32,000 searches of city residents. A striking 85 of the targets were racial minorities, almost double their share of the population. Those hundreds, 532,000.
What?
Those hundreds of thousands of Black and Latino New Yorkers were presumed suspicious and forced to stop in public and submit to searching. Presumed wrong. This one guy said that he grew up in New York City. I was subjected to the same stops as Marquez Clayton, a former New York City PD detective who retired in 2005. After 20 years on the force, Claxton says that while New York City's profiling policy clearly violates people's rights, it will continue until there's a penalty for the constitutional violation. Civil rights advocates agree. They insist the program is not only humiliating to hundreds of thousands of innocent New Yorkers, straining relationships between the police and law-abiding citizens, but it is unconstitutional. A federal law in New York heard a challenge to the policy in May, and the ruling is expected in the coming months. Mayor Michael Bloomberg continues to tout the program, but even he is careful to agree that it does not racially profile. Nobody racially profiles, Bloomberg insists. Last month, in response to the question about the local legislation that could curb the practice, it is telling New York City, with an unusually diverse and liberal political establishment, is so relevant on racial profiling that police have sparked federal lawsuits, city council battles, and rancorous debates in the content, and replace a centrist and fairly popular mayor. Most of the Democratic candidates oppose the policy. In many other parts of the country, profiling continues far less outcry. While 25 states have technically passed legislation to discourage racial profiling, only 12 of those states actually ban it. Even then, if you're looking for the laws that penalize policy found guilty of profiling, the number of states drops to 5. As the ACLU documented in a 2009 report. So New York City is getting the light shined on them with all this.
Yeah.
5 million people? And I said before 32,000. It didn't seem to me when I was reading it that I was correct. And what my, it must be my glasses are dirty or something. I just,
well, you know,
holy cow. No wonder I can't see.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
This is there are two things I'm going to mention. One, the 5,000. 5 million, 5 billion, 5 whatever you want to get to. There is a problem in America that disturbs me greatly, and it's been a trend ever since the 80s. And you look at the incarceration rate since the 80s. It's gone from, you know, a little bitty level, standard level, straight up like Mount Everest.
Right.
There is a trend in America to basically we've created a police state. And there's a trend to criminalize everything and to overwhelm everything with, you know, you think that it's the same way with our NSA and everything else. If we can just record and stop and frisk and get everybody to shuffle with their shoes in their hand through the airports and x-ray everyone and, you know, put their naked image up on the widescreen TVs, we'll be able to stop crime maybe somehow somewhere down the road. And it's literally... anytime you're stopping 5 million people for any reason, what the, you know what I mean? It becomes one of those things. It's like you're just, are you kidding me?
Right.
There is no reason for that.
Okay.
And there's this fallacious argument.
I'll be right with you.
There's a fallacious argument in America that if you can stop everyone, you'll prevent a crime somewhere. You know, if you can record everything, you'll find one spot.
Well,
I want
to get back to that,
you know?
Because...
and that's the problem that I have.
TV in England, you know...
But they're doing it here now. And
well,
that's really a problem.
But
it's
we're
a huge problem.
1 million times the size. So,
yeah,
you know.
But you know what?
Let's see what the caller says about that. Caller, who's this? Okay, you're just listening, I hope. Okay, just listen. We'll just listen. We're going to go to Sue's school in a minute, but this is the difference now.
But
I mean, I'm watching, you know, they have Law and Order UK on, and I love it. It's a great show. It comes on BBC.
Well, you know, you love all shows. Sorry, you're a film critic. What the hell are we talking
about? But the thing is that the police say, okay, let's go to CCTV.
Yeah.
I mean, and they get the guy coming out of the store. They get him going into the store, mugging the person. Yeah, they get him coming out with blood dripping. They can follow. I mean, forget it.
But
England is big as my house. Compared to the United States.
Person of interest.
Right.
Person
of interest.
You just follow somebody throughout their life. You can see them
in the stores,
on the sidewalks, on their phone. You know.
Absolutely. Now, the fact is, New York City has just as much spying capability as the CIA.
Yes.
I mean, they told, when the bombing came in, they told they didn't need the CIA. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't need the FBI. We have our own.
Yeah.
And they have their own FBI that they sent to a crime scene in one of the countries where they had a plane crash to investigate it.
Right.
Along with Robert Gentation, along with everybody else. I mean, New York City is New York City. You know, forget about what these they're doing in Kentucky. And they ain't doing nothing compared with New York City. We're talking about five boroughs. They got you.
Yes. But here... Now, that's just a question of money you know, and things like that. Okay,
oh,
New York City has enough.
City. I shouldn't say
yeah,
out of boroughs.
New York City has enough resources to do that. Okay,
that's
most,
why we're always helping Mississippi and,
yeah.
and Kentucky when they have these tornadoes.
Right. Now, but now here's the problem, and the catch is always, you know, just like. Say putting, you know, CCTV on every corner. You can, you know, when there's a bank robbery, we've got a record of it. A good example of that was in Boston. When the guys blew up the marathon, they were able to, from public and police, you know, resources, instantly identify and track down the guys. It wasn't long at all. We had the two brothers, and we got them. Okay.
Yeah, it was 2 days?
Now,
2 days?
That's the good side, you want to say. However, I want to stress this. They asked the public, and they got tons of help from the public. You know, everybody's got the capability now. And again, it's one of those things. You've got the – just because you can, should you. You've got the capability now. Every phone is a camera. Every phone is a video camera.
Every phone's got a tracker.
Yeah, everything, right? We've got enough ability to track every American.
Did you take off your tracker?
I don't care anymore.
Because that's safe.
But – look, they can look at you from satellites. They can sit there and read micro.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't even matter if you've got the little camera on the corner of the building. You can be filmed. You can be recorded. You can be everywhere all the time. Okay? Every company does it in micro. You know, I work in retail as well as station. The schools were monitored. You know, the classrooms I'm in, they listen in the office. They record to make sure that you're not abusing the kids aren't abusing you, you know, blah, blah, blah. Every store has video cameras. Every store has tags on every device that you walk out the door, it beeps, you know, all this kind of stuff for anti-theft, everything. But again, it gets to the point of you want to catch or correct one act. You want to catch one thief. And to do that, you record everyone. You know, you want to prevent one crime.
Right.
So you record and
right.
embarrass and detain and research and
well,
everyone.
And it doesn't matter as long as
but this
who's
thing.
Ever doing it
right.
is doing it for a legitimate purpose and doesn't care about all the other extraneous things. They're looking for one thing and the other thing, throw it away.
But here's the thing. I believe literally in a free society. And I don't think everybody needs to be x-rayed and recorded and strip searched every time they go anywhere just to prevent the maybe once in a lifetime terrorist or whatever, right?
They don't do it in Israel.
But
I got four people living in my house in Israel.
Yeah, most people everywhere they don't do this. But anyway, it becomes a problem because the fallacy is that if you record everything, you can prevent something.
Right.
Okay. That is not
you can't
a viable
it.
Excuse.
It's only the aftermath of the person getting away.
And that's what we proved.
Well,
in
unless it's like,
you know,
what's the Tom Cruise movie?
What?
I can look at you and I know what you're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
You're
going to
kill somebody.
Minority Report. But here's the thing. Again, that was a Philip K. Dick book that he wrote in the 60s in a predictive way. He said, if we continue down this path of what Dwight D. Eisenhower said, the military-industrial complex, they will not only record physically and everything, they're going to record mentally. And they're going to see, you know, because it is a, if you think something, you might act on it. So let's prevent the thought.
Where did I
you
read that
to,
about
but they're
putting
already,
a chip in you or something?
Yeah, look, well, they already do. They chip every soldier and all that. That's automatic. We've already got that
technology.
Yes.
My daughter, that's why she got out of the military.
Well, the thing is, you know, they do it so they say we can find them on the battlefield.
Well, it was the DOA.
They
were going to chip. They were going to
again,
be a DNA on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, they DNA and they chip them so that they can identify the body, supposedly. But it's also, you can track that,
well,
right?
But
and
that don't happen anymore.
Phones,
you don't get blown up anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is, listen, when you record everything, it's the same. You know, I joked about this like a week or so ago, but, you know, they always say it'll prevent crime. You know, it doesn't prevent crime.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does kind of help solve the crimes after the fact. You can go back and trace
it. Always after the fact.
But the thing is,
because that was the case,
mythical thing.
I've been told my wife every day.
Well, yeah, but they want the mythical thing of we can prevent it if we know everything.
Right.
And it's just, it's a fallacy. It's wrong. And the other side, you know.
But
you,
is
you really,
that,
but
is that though?
Thing, but it's becoming a real thing because.
What you see, here's the thing that it's wrong. That are they doing it to prevent the crime, or are they doing it just to keep an eye on you?
That's the
See,
question.
This is it.
Look, and that becomes
why are they doing it? To prevent the crime? I'm all for preventing crime, but are they doing it so they can just keep track of me?
Well, here's the problem. With anything that humans do,
right,
the human enters into it. It's not a machine. It's not black and white,
right.
A and B, C. It doesn't work that way. So we have the power to do something, and we have the power to observe everyone all the time, right? Now, application of power is different. The perfect example of that is about 74%, last time I looked at the 74% of all crimes committed by Caucasians in America. However, they account for around maybe 12-14% of the incarcerations. All the rest is black and Hispanic and, you know, whatever, minority.
Others.
Now, the vast majority of those are black. Blacks are, I think, what is it, something like 14% of the population?
16%? No, they're about, they're more than a quarter, sure.
I didn't think they were up to even 20.
Oh, yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
Okay. Nonetheless, they account for around, you know, 70% or something of all the rest. So the application is very different than the idea. The idea is let's monitor everybody and catch the criminals. The truth is they apply it toward minorities.
Okay, so
that's the same thing we're seeing with stop and frisk in New York. Because what was the numbers you were looking at? Out of 5 million?
5 million.
It was
86%.
86% were minority. That tells you the application just
like, well, what Kelly said,
just like
fear.
Kelly said, was toward one community and for one reason.
Not one community, one individual group.
No, that's what I'm saying. One, I use community that way, but I'm saying one group, the black, and he said black and brown. But so anyone of any kind of, you know, skin color.
I think he would like to take that
now,
back.
Well, I'm sure he would. It doesn't matter. That's the truth. He said the truth.
It's on the internet,
all,
and it will always be on the internet.
Now, the problem is, again, if you stop and frisk everybody that walked 5 feet in New York, it would be a fair application.
Well, no, they have.
But,
They have stopped and frisked more people than live in New York since they started that. They
so
are New York City.
That.
See, when we say New York, we got a misnomer because New York covers the entire state.
We're talking about New York City. Yeah.
Which has a population of about 11 million people.
Right.
More people than in most states. But in New York City, which is made up of five boroughs, it's Manhattan, you got Brooklyn, you got the Bronx, you got Staten Island, you got Richmond. So that makes up all of New York City.
Queens type stuff, man.
And Queens, right. So did I say Richmond? Okay, Queens. Anyway, so you need, and I shouldn't have said I'm from Queens too. But anyway, so
yeah, and by the way, that used to be Kings and Queens. But for some reason, those games kind of came up.
Anyway, so what happened was that so you have that 11 million people. And that's when I say New York City instead of New York. So the thing is that Kelly says we need to instill fear.
Right.
And that's what
it does.
But
this gets to me, though.
It's shocking off.
The application of
policy
is wrong.
Right, of course.
If it were universal, no, I'm just saying, if it was universal and they stopped everybody, they stopped every banker and every lawyer and every little old white lady walking down the street and searched them up, that would be fair application of law. And you would be saying, we're trying to catch every criminal before it occurs.
Right.
They don't do that.
No.
And what they're doing is targeting minorities.
As a matter of fact,
so,
there was a policeman who retired who was on the police force. He came out yesterday. He said, we are given quotas. We stop kids.
Right.
We'll stop a baby in a baby carriage. We will stew, and we need to fill the quota. If you don't fill the quota, you're sent on an unbelievable detail to clean up garbage. You will do
that.
So you need a quota every single day.
Yeah. You know, and that's, by the way, just to let you know, since you're behind the times, you know, you moved away. It's not your fault.
Yeah.
Latest estimate, 19 million, New York City. 19.
New York City?
Yeah.
Or New York State?
New York City.
Oh, you make sure.
That's what it is.
I don't know about that.
I'm just like 18.9.
In New York City or New York? Does it say New York?
Because
if it says New York, that means New York State. If it says New York City, that means New York City. See, people confuse the two because they just say New York.
Listen, New York City's metropolitan area population is the largest at 18.9 million.
Jesus.
So, a few more have
moved California?
Over there.
What's Los Angeles? L.A.
I'll look it up. But so a lot of people. But here's the point. Again, your target.
New York City
is not fair. It's targeting
right
a population. So that to me is the problem. Now this I don't know if this is right or not, but it says currently LA is that doesn't even sound right. That's not even nice. 4.065 million.
No, I see that because I thought California had the biggest population. That's the whole state now. The New York State.
The whole state may have more because the state's much larger than New York, but as in the city now. New York City is the most populous in North America.
Wow. All right.
But anyway, point being, I have a problem with, and this is what makes me so mad, this thing about if we can catch everybody, you know, we can incarcerate everybody, everything's good. No, it's just never applied equally. Good example of that, you know, we've talked about
crack,
the drugs. So crack is treated totally different than cocaine. Most drug use and drug selling in America is in suburbia, in quote-unquote white areas. And most of the arrests and prosecutions are always black. So, again, it's application of something. If it was truly fair, you might say it's worth the loss of freedom. But to me, the unequal application of the technology make it completely illegal and completely invalid because they're not being fair and honest about it. And I think that's the but again, you know, when you get one of these things like you're saying, well, you know, it may have prevented some crimes. You know, I made this joke before, but if everybody, every American were just locked up at home, you know, maybe tied to their bed or locked within a cage in the room, then I guarantee you the next day there'd be no bank robbers, right? There would be no little petty thefts. There would be no rapes in America and all that. You know why? Because everybody was living in a 5x5 cage at home. Now, is that the validity you need to say that we need cages for every American? It ended crime, and that would be a logical conclusion. Hey, locking everybody within a little cage, you know, tying them down. Hey, how about this? Maybe we can even sedate them all. Maybe we just give them a powerful sedative, and they could all be drooling in their sleep, chained to the bed. The fact that that would end crime doesn't make it right. And you know what part of freedom means? That some people have the freedom to do wrong, and some people are going to curse you out. Some people are going to be rude to you. Some people are going to not hold the door for you. Some people are going to take your chair and not get up for the elderly person on the bus or whatever. And at the same rate, someone's going to rob you. Someone's going to bump into you. Someone's going to take your parking spot and everything else that happens. And that's called freedom. And what you do after that is the people who violate you, attack you, steal from you, beat you, or rape you, or anything illegal, they then get tracked down and arrested. But you can't do preventative removal of rights.
Well,
our
chairman is not going to be calling in.
Well, they may have gotten called up.
Well,
sometimes they get called in.
That's right. Now, you know what I want to do?
One of the things, let's mention one of the things that she was doing that this may have been the problem. So one of the neat things that's happening in North Carolina, you may have noticed this national news, it's made it all across the country now. We have what's called Moral Mondays. We have recently suffered, due to the joy of voter apathy, we suffered the loss of the House, the Senate, and the governorship all at once.
Right.
And that's that, you know, perfect trifecta for a perfect storm that lets one party get their way. And right now we've got a Republican rule for the first time in 150 years. And boy, have they been having a field day. They've done everything from, restrict voter rights to end you know, all abortion clinics, curb all education funding. You know, they fired people. They cut back what worker rights, worker pay, mm-hmm. unemployment. They halved it. So, you know, they've been having a field day, and they also gave all corporations tax-free, you know, holiday. They've given all the rich a tax break. They ended the estate tax, North Carolina, you know, across the board. They've just been going to town. And you mentioned earlier things like they've raised property tax here. They raised our highway taxes. Mm-hmm. They're now putting tolls on our roads. They also raised our gas tax. We got 30-cent raise.
And these are the supposedly...
And these are the anti-tax, you know,
anti-tax, low tax on the American people.
But given all of this,
yes.
given this attack, endless attack on all civil liberties and rights and, mm-hmm. you know, everything, people started protesting. And the protest grew from literally a few people to a couple dozen, a couple hundred to a couple thousand, and then last I heard there was almost 20,000.
No, well, there was 8,000,
parts of
8 to 10,000 people in Raleigh, North Carolina, and on Memorial Mondays I was at the next to last one. I wasn't at the last one, which was bigger than the one I am saying bigger than the one that I was.
Well, they said it was record breaking.
Right, record breaking. Well,
what they've done now is they're expanding it.
Let's
see if
this
that
person
program?
Now can hear me. Hello, caller, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And who's this?
Great. There's a little bit of feedback. So this is the I'm hearing my own voice through my phone.
Is that okay?
Hello, can you hear me?
I'm sorry about that.
I hear you fine.
So go ahead.
No problem. I think we've cut it out. Okay, my name is Luis Rodriguez, and I'm a I've listened to the show many times and been on the show a few times. And you guys are talking about Moral Monday. Hello,
yes.
Mr. Lawson. How are you?
I am doing fine, Lewis. How are you?
Great. I'm doing well.
Recognize
I didn't get on.
I didn't recognize your number when you called it before. And when I answered, I said I didn't hear anybody. So that's why. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Lewis.
I didn't get the name of your guest, but I'd like to thank him for his insightful comment.
That's my producer.
Oh, you're a producer. All right. Well, you said Thomas?
Yes.
Yes, hi.
Yes, Thomas, thank you so much. I'm loving everything you're saying. I've been listening for probably about 30 minutes. And yes, with the NSA spying and this whole idea in our culture suddenly that if we – you know, if we regulate everything, we can somehow stop crime from happening. And yeah, now you're into Moral Monday, and I just wanted to say that I am one of the organizers of the Charlotte Moral Monday coming on August 19th. And I just wanted to put out there that we're going to be at Marshall Park, Uptown, August 19th, 5 p.m., this thing is blowing up. We've done a couple different press conferences and interviews today, and we did one about a week ago. We released the Facebook event page less than 48 hours ago, and already had close to 800 people sign up and say that they were coming out to this from all across the state. So we're very, very pleased.
Well, you know, can you explain to the listening audience what is Moral Monday and why it's going to be started?
Great. I'd love to do that. Moral Monday was started by the state NAACP. It was originally supposed to be preachers going to the state capitol and just, you know, kneeling in the rotunda there and praying and choosing to engage in civil disobedience by not leaving as instructed by Capitol Police. Then on the first day, I think it began April 29th, they had about 40 people show up and 17 people chose to get arrested. And I want to make very clear that this wasn't willy-nilly arrests. This wasn't police running into a crowd or people, you know, turning over cars or setting things on fire. This was a bunch of students who chose to go in and chose to speak to their legislators, and when their legislators refused, they chose not to leave when directed to, and were arrested while trying to engage their leaders and do what the Constitution says is their right to engage and instruct their legislators. So from there, week after week, it grew. Preachers from all over the state came in, congregations came in, community organizations came in, environmental organizations came in, labor unions came in, healthcare providers came in, and it grew every week. It grew. I think the largest number was the Mega Rally on June 3rd, where I believe something like 150 people chose that day to engage in civil disobedience in the rotunda to make their point and for this to become a national issue, and it has. This has gone all over the country and internationally. People are looking at the state of North Carolina, looking at the influence of the American Legislative Exchange Council, the ALEC, looking at how our governor, Pat McCrory, made campaign promises directly to the women of North Carolina, saying that he would not infringe in any way on their rights to their choice, their rights to their bodies, or women's health care. He went directly against that. These legislators have refused to listen to the will of the people. They have some of the lowest approval ratings, in our state, in the country. The approval ratings for, according to one poll, the approval ratings for the North Carolina General Assembly are lower than the approval ratings for Moral Monday itself. More people are in agreement with Moral Monday. And through a Pew Research poll, I believe, don't quote me on that, but I believe it was a Pew Research poll, showed that 82% of North Carolinians polled did not agree with how the anti-pro-choice legislation was pushed through the process, dropped in the dead of night, hidden behind first a motorcycle safety bill, and then behind an anti-Sharia law bill, as if we need that in this state. I'm pretty sure the Taliban isn't out here trying to take over, Winston-Salem. But you never know. There are some very Taliban-esque movement going on in our GA right now. So this GA has attacked immigrants. This GA has attacked women. It's attacked education. It's attacked educators, which is why at the last Raleigh Moral Monday, we had close to 10,000 people show up, and busloads of teachers came in their red NCAE T-shirts to show support and solidarity.
They came with their communist T-shirts on and red.
Communists, Republican. We're surprised that the Republicans didn't try to say, hey, look at all that red. This must be our crowd out there.
Listen, Louis, listen. When you have the head Taliban running North Carolina, and his name is Art Pope, everybody knows that Pat McCrory is nothing but a gopher. He was a gopher for Duke Energy for 20 years plus when he was the mayor of Charlotte. Now he's the gopher for Duke Energy and Art Pope as the governor of this state.
Yeah. Well, we are in the progressive community extremely, and I think across the state, people are extremely disappointed with Governor Pat McCrory in this less than a year in office, and he's already proven that he's not to be trusted. He's proven that he is not a man of his word, and he's proven that he does not govern for all the citizens of this state, but for a very few. And they've done all this under the auspices of bringing in jobs and bringing in corporations to our state.
Yeah.
But we really have to look at what kinds of corporations are being targeted when they're cutting education. Who wants to bring their company to a state where their children can't be educated, where teachers are being laid off, where it pays not to get a master's degree or higher level education to do better at your job, where women are losing the right to self-determination, where voting rights are being cut. All these things are going on. So I'll wrap up by saying that Moral Monday, the Forward Together movement, is going across the state. Last week it was in Asheville. On the 19th, there will be one here in Charlotte, and there will be a simultaneous one. It's so popular that they're in multiple cities on the same day. There'll be a simultaneous one in Manteo out on the coast. So there's going to be a coastal Moral Monday. There was a mountain Moral Monday in Asheville. There's going to be a coastal Moral Monday, and Charlotte gets one of its own, just the Charlotte Moral Monday, which will be on the 19th.
Where?
This is going to be in Marshall Park. Uptown, okay. That's the corner of, I believe, 3rd and McDowell, and that's going to be at 5 p.m. on August 19th.
That's a Saturday?
That is a Monday. It's Moral Monday, man.
I'm thinking about the County Executive Committee, which is this Friday.
Yep.
I mean, this Saturday. And people need to come out to that. But the one thing before I let you go, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about, is that everybody needs to know that Luis Rodriguez is the man in Charlotte. He was the voice and the inspiration to having the first group of people to get together for, and the organization you were with was what?
I work for Action NC.
Action NC. But yeah, correct. But you, when I first met you, you were working with.
Right. When we first met, I was a de facto spokesperson for Occupy Charlotte.
Occupy Charlotte.
Yep.
And
yeah.
In the long gone days of yesteryear.
but that was the catalyst for all this.
Yep.
I mean, because we saw what was coming down.
Yep.
And that, you know,
the results of the Occupy.
Right. Well, and you got Mayor McCrory, who everybody said, oh, he's such a nice guy. He was moderate when he was in Charlotte. Well, listen, the mayor don't run Charlotte. The city council and the county commissioner does. The mayor does what they say. So, you know, he didn't have any influence about what went on in this city. He didn't have influence about bringing in all these major corporations that we have in Charlotte. That was a city council that did that. So, you know, don't give this man any credit. He was a gopher for Duke Power for 20 years while he was the mayor of this city, and he let Duke Power do what they want. Now he's the gopher for them up the state. Why do you think they want to raise the rate now? They hadn't raised the rate when he was the mayor of Charlotte because we had a Democratic governor.
Right. But that's why we're also going to get new power plants.
The gasoline went up 30 cents.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you kidding me? Art Pope runs the state.
Right.
Art Pope. And that's who we need. And his stores are the what? Dollar something? Not
Dollar
something.
General?
No. What's his store?
Roses. He owns Roses.
Roses. But there's another store. It's like Dollar Stores. It's something
dollar?
Stores. No, I forgot what it is.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. But anyway.
We'll just randomly name things that have dollar in the title.
But the thing is, so, ladies and gentlemen, Luis Rodriguez is a man here who was involved in helping this city not go down the drain. He helped us in every aspect, in everything that we needed to know about what was going on here.
Right.
All you had to do was call Luis. And he got you the information and told you what you could do to prevent it.
Like we talked about earlier, made us an international city, made us a viable city that people wanted to do things here, like the DNC.
Absolutely. So I want to
thank you guys.
Awesome.
And Mr. Lawson, your check is in the mail. but I will say thank you. The work that we're doing, especially around Moral Monday, is definitely a coalition. It's coalition work. There's Greenpeace and the NCAE, CMAE, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Association of Educators. Many ministers, many churches are involved in this, and this couldn't have been done without the influence and input of the churches and the great faith leadership of this city. And of course, this is sponsored primarily and promoted primarily by the NAACP. So we are very happy to have Reverend Kojo Nantambu at the helm, and we're looking forward to a great event on Monday, on August 19th.
I want to thank you, Luis.
Everybody come out and support this. It's very important.
I want to thank you, Louis.
Right. Oh, and also find us on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at Charlotte Moral Monday and on Twitter at hashtag Moral Monday.
Very good.
And hey, Louis,
yes, sir.
Just a request. Do you mind if, you know, we find y'all from Facebook in person so that, you know, we can do something, you know, dastardly like buy you a drink and hang out and discuss these?
I am very partial to Bacardi.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, matter of fact, that's what we're having right now. Anyway.
All right. Well, you All guys right. Have a great rest of the show. Thank you so much for covering this, and I look forward to future shows with you, okay?
Thank you.
Doing
Thank
what you're doing.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was great with Luis Rodriguez. And, you know, the thing is that I went to him two or three times, but the signal, evidently, he's getting a lot of feedback, so he hears. All right. Now, listen, we're behind. I got to go. We got to go to this. Seussical the musical. We've got to go.
And by Seussical, we mean Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, tell us about the Cat in the Hat. Tell us about the Cat in the Hat. You know all about that.
I know all of this stuff.
I mean, give me
hasn't enjoyed Green Eggs and Ham? Who hasn't enjoyed Cat in the Hat? These things are just classics. I mean,
well,
you've got to.
Hey, well, listen to some of the music here. Just listen. Noda, N-O-D-A, School of the Arts, which I am a board member of, and which Mr. Portner is a board member of, and we presented, not me, I wasn't on stage, but we have kids.
So much talent.
Let me just give you a little bit of stuff here. The Noda School of the Arts began in 2005 as a nonprofit summer arts program for children in neighborhoods along North Davidson Street. A diverse area of artists, blue-collar workers, musicians, and small business owners. NOTA takes its name from the first two letters of North and Davidson, forming Charlotte's unofficial arts district. NOTA's simple streets are defined by the mill houses, bungalows, and former cotton mills. And the year since NOTA School of the Arts began, Soho's little sister has become gentrified. Amanda Bowen Walmack, a former social worker and the first executive director of the school, believed that the arts could transform a child's life. I learned that it's not enough to give traditional services, she said. The kids who succeeded found a niche and pursued it. Acting, painting, music, theater opened the doors to new worlds. Our director right now is Kelly Brown. And Kelly Brown has been director for the Noda School of the Arts for just a little longer than 5 years.
Okay.
5 years. And let me play you a little bit what our director, Kelly Brown, said after the show.
Well, we just picked this person up from wandering around the outside of the Blumenthal Theater. What is your name?
I'm Kelly Brown.
Kelly Brown. She's looking for a place to do something like create maybe a performing arts storyline somewhere. Mm-hmm. You did a great job.
Thank you.
And I have told the kids, this is the best performance I have seen since I have been familiar with the performing arts.
Right, and I think tomorrow night will be even better.
And you were worried. You, oh, you can't do that. Stop playing. Stop drawing. Stop. Stand up. Talk. Every one of them said ABIC, always be in character. They were in character. They were in character. It was a fabulous, fabulous job. The choreographer, which I haven't had, I need to speak to her.
Robin Bishop.
Robin Bishop. But for someone who does the cleans the dishes and does the sweeping of the floors, you have done a fabulous job.
Thank you. I have to give God all the credit, and I have an incredible team.
Oh, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
They are unbelievable. So they hope they didn't leave it all on the floor on the stage tonight.
I told them to. They
can pick it up tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, they're older than me, younger than me, so I guess they can.
Yeah, they've got at least three in there.
They want to get on stage.
That was a short interview with our director, and I want to move along here because we have we're about a half hour behind because of that special call from Luis Rodriguez. But there's a interview that I want
to just focus like on those kids, those awesome kids with all their talent.
Well, there is one person that I want everybody to hear from. And that is our chairman, Mr. Michael Sales. And Mike was part of, I mean, he did a great job in getting.
Mike's incredible.
Yeah, he is incredible. And gee whiz, why can't I find it? Well, yeah. Mike is incredible. And this is a short interview before we start playing music with Mike Sales, the director of the Middle School of Arts.
Well, I am here with the. Chairman of the Board of Notre School of the Arts, Mr. Mike Sales. And so tell us how it's going.
It's going great. We have probably more people than I've seen come out in a long time. Everybody's happy. We're into the show. We just went into intermission for the last show. Everybody's excited, and we're having a good time down here.
Well, this is, I think, the last three shows have been, I think, the biggest I've seen altogether in a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. We've had the most pre-sales of any year we've done so far.
With hardly any advertising.
That's right. It's mostly been word of mouth and the support of the parents, which we always think is great. This show in particular, it's filled to the rafters. The gallery's full. The balcony's full, the side's full, everything's full. It's been great to see all this participation and support from all our supporters and fans.
Well, you know, I think more of the kids are involved with this because this is not like Cinderella or Schoolhouse Rock that they've seen 100,000 times before.
Yeah.
This is something different, and the tunes are so catchy.
Yes. Yeah. The one great thing about this show is that Dr. Seuss is a classic. Everybody knows Dr. Seuss. Everybody knows Cat in the Hat. Everybody knows Horton. And I think it's a credit to our students that they were able to take this show, take the dance numbers, take the acting, the singing, all of it, put it together, and just make a really great product. And, you know, the fans are all into the show tonight. They're participating with the students. There's a lot of crowd clapping and applause and stuff. It's just been a really great show all the way around.
Well, you know, see now, I mean, you need to speak for yourself because I ain't had Dr. Seuss when I was growing up. I mean, Dr. Seuss is some Johnny. When did Dr. Seuss really come out? It had to be with 80s or 70s, late.
Yeah, it was the biggest. I remember the biggest one I remember was The Grinch, obviously. Grinch Stole Christmas and The Cat in the Hat. Those are the big things, and actually we've incorporated those guys into this show, too. So, again, it's been a great show. It's a lot of popularity in the show. The fans love it. The audience loves it. Our students love it. We're having a great time down here.
Well, you know, my youngest grandson, Blake, was with me. I brought him here earlier, and he was afraid to meet the Grinch. He said, oh, no, I don't see the Grinch. So all of a sudden, the Grinch snuck in and sat down right next to him. And he did not want to look at him.
Oh, no.
I said, no, listen, the Grinch is nice. He's nice. He said, he's nice. And he says, I'm not really nice. He says, do you have Grinch teeth? He said, no, next time I'm going to have Grinch teeth. He said, okay, I guess you're better then. And then he told him after the first show, because he's back for the second show today.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, you were the best.
Here's a good story with the Grinch, too. That Grinch that we have this year, this is his first year in Notre School. So he stepped up to the plate. And that's what we see a lot with our students. We have kids, the first time they've ever done any theater, ever been on a professional stage like this. And a lot of times they just blossom. We pour ourselves into them. And what you see tonight, that's the result.
And see, this Notre School of the Arts, we have kids from all over. And most of the kids have never or very little bit played, sung, or danced anywhere.
That's right. That's a good thing that we try to do. We take kids, we seek out kids in a lot of ways who have never had any theatrical experience but have a lot of inborn creativity. And just really, they just want opportunity. And so that's what we try to do. That's part of our challenge, obviously, but that's a challenge that we like because we get to see them come up on the stage after 6 weeks and just become all new kids. Their parents, you see their parents in the audience watch these kids perform. They tell them it's like it's a whole new kid, and we just think it's a great thing.
And I have to give a disclaimer, since I am a member of the board of Notre School of the Arts, tell us where people can give a donation or help coordinate something next year or this year, whatever.
So two things. Go to our website, notaschoolofarts.org. We have a donation page there, but I would also say go to our contact page and sign up for our email updates. We constantly update our parents, our supporters on what we're doing, new things that we have coming out. We have a potential partnership with Carowinds that we may be doing in the fall. We're trying to do more shows in the fall and in the spring. Connect with us that way through the email, and also you can donate to us on our website. We also have a Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook, and you can see our stuff on Instagram too. We're all over the place, but the best place to start is at our website, notaschoolofarts.org.
And you can also get to them if you want through my show, The Last Word, and that's on blogtalkradio.com. And you can also go to my webpage, which is www.aac-ncdp.org. But if you want to call me, 704-458-8150.
Knocked us off. I don't know what I said for the last. Well, I'll just repeat that. You heard the young lady. She was the lead in Suzuko the Musical, and
that part. That was the excerpt from Gordon. Here's the Who.
Right. Here's the Who. And Jamie is a
someone,
right.
And they think they're all alone.
They think they're all alone. Right. On Expected Us. Jamie JoJo is 13 years old. She's a freshman at Northwest School of the Arts, my alma mater, and this is her sixth year in Notre. I mean, she started at 7 years of age.
So think about that. Drama training for her entire life through this school, this program. It's fantastic. I mean, these are people that they're training basically for Broadway or something. This is amazing work that they're doing.
That's right.
So she has been in there since she was very young, and now she's one of the leads.
That's right. And she played her role was Candy Kid in Willy Wonka. On her first day, she and all her friends would, on her favorite day, she and all her friends would go to the amusement park, ride all the rides, eat all the food, and play all the games without lines. Jamie was fabulous. So her daddy is Doug May, who is the engineer for the show, the sound engineer. And she also has a younger sister named Joy May, who was in the show. She plays Vlad. And she has a younger brother named Liam May. And he played one of the Wickersham brothers. So this, I have another part of JoJo that I want to play for you all, and I hope I can find it here. And it's called, the last one you heard was All Alone in the Universe. And this one is the very beginning of the show. And it's called Old Who Thinks You Can Think.
Now that's a very unusual hat. I wonder what's under a hat such as that. It could be a creature they call a gazat who bounces things on his head because it's flat. Or a stripe-loving pipester from the upper mount back. Or a sort of, kind of, hat-wearing cat.
I can see that you've got quite a mind for your age. Why, one thinks you dragged me right onto the stage. Now I'm here. There's no telling what may ensue. With a cat such as me, and a thinker like you. Oh, the things you can think. Oh, the things you can think, if you're willing to try. Think invisible ink, or a gink with a stink, or a stare to the sky. If you open your mind, oh, the things you will find, lining up to get loose. Oh, the things you can think when you think about Sue.
With a cherry on top.
To be scarier than scared.
All the things you can think, all the things you can think, all the things you can think, where you think.
on, and she was the first person we see when the show opened.
Yep.
And she calls, she looks at this hat on the stage, and you know it's the Cat in the Hat hat. And all of a sudden she says, oh, I wonder whose hat this could be. And all of a sudden he said, you called me out, here I am. And he puts it on, and that starts to show out. And those two, I believe, even though Horton is a big part of it and Gertrude too, these two are my favorite two characters in the show, JoJo and the Cat in the Hat. And I'm going to play a little interview with Mr. Cat in the Hat. His name is Adam Smith. Okay, Mr. Cat in the Hat.
Yes.
I'm bringing my grandson tomorrow. Two of them. One thinks he's an actor already. He's only five. What do you advise him to do? If you were speaking to him.
I was speaking to him. If you want to be active, leave it on the stage. Do everything you can to try and make, be the best performer you can be. Do everything. Stay in your character. Stuff like that.
A-B-I-C, right? A-B-I-C. Always be a character.
Exactly.
You are fabulous.
Thank you.
You are fabulous.
Thank you.
Thank you. Give us your name first.
Abraham Smith.
Abraham Smith,
yes.
Is, who else is here? Do you have any brothers and sisters? Oh, we have one of the monkeys here. And what is your name?
Clark Brown.
Excuse me?
Clark Brown.
Clark, and Clark, is this your first show?
No, this is my fourth show.
Oh, because I saw you last year, right?
Yes, sir.
That's right. And I want to tell you, you know, I believe I like this show better than I did last year. This is the best show I've seen. I think you guys really, really did a fabulous job. How do you feel about the show so far?
I think it was the best we've ever done for me that I've ever done.
Okay. All right. And what is your last name?
Brown.
Brown. Clark Brown?
Yes, sir.
All right, Clark. I will see you tomorrow afternoon, and I will see you on tomorrow night. Thank you. Now, that was Abraham Smith and Clark Brown. Abraham plays the Cat in the Hat. He's 15. He's going into his sophomore year at Hopewell High School. And this is his seventh year at NOTA. So you can see these kids, a lot of them, have been with this group almost their entire life. The grown-up portion of their life. Not their kiddie portion, but this, you know, the first year in school, second year in school. And he is... his favorite role was Drake in Annie Jr., and his perfect day would include staying in bed until 2, inventing an object that would revolutionize industry and the world, and play PlayStation with Morgan Freeman. With Morgan Freeman. With Morgan Freeman.
Hey,
how about that?
Hey, the one person you want to do your live story, right? Listen.
Yeah.
These guys, the thing that excites me about this program, not only does it help kids, not only is it just a neat thing to do and, you know, occupy your time in the summer or anything like that. No. This is a year-round program that has proved itself over time. Kids are absolutely honest. They do not do things repeatedly that they don't want to do.
Absolutely. Right.
And the fact that these kids come back year after year after year
and
shows.
And their parents have to pay for them to come there.
But it's a graduated scale. You're being sent off to like a horror camp. This is so good and so fun. These kids are coming back year after year after year. That's fantastic. This isn't a little program that they breeze in and out of and say,
let me explain this. Clark Brown, who I just spoke to, was second person, plays one of the Wickersham brothers. He's 9. He's going into a fourth grade at Irwin Academy.
Mm-hmm.
This is his fourth year. That means he was 5 years old when he first started. And he said that his favorite role was the Cheshire Cat in Alice in Wonderland Jr.
How about that?
And his perfect day would include eating sushi and driving a Hennessy Burnham GT. Oh,
right, this kid's got aspirations here.
Yeah, yeah.
But look,
gotta have money too. I mean, what? I haven't even heard of a Hennessy Burnham GT. Have you?
But how nice and how worldly and urbane is this that these kids are getting exposed to the world of dance, of song, of drama. They're getting, they know how to do productions now.
They see how to do costuming. Sure. They've learned literature. I mean, this is fantastic stuff. We're talking about the complete package.
Well,
and it's so fun, but these kids want to do it over.
Well, we're going to have a major talk on baseball very shortly, but I want to get some more of this in, I'll have to play this some of this next week also. But this is Amari L. Thompson. She plays Maisie in this story, and Maisie is amazing. What happens is Maisie is a bird, and she has this egg, but she's, Maisie likes to travel, likes to flirt, and she ain't got time to be tied up with no daggone egg. So she lures Horton with her wicked ways and asks him to watch the egg for a little bit. Now, here's an elephant going to sit on an egg and watch it, keep it warm. But, you know, elephants are true blue. They make a promise, they're going to do it. And Horton is convinced by Maisie. Maisie said, look, I'm only going to be gone a little bit of time. Don't worry about it. Yeah, well, he says, okay, I'll do it. But, you know, I'm supposed to be looking for this speck of dust, the Who and JoJo, but I will do it for you, Maisie. And Maisie says, oh, wonderful. What do you mean? A year, 51, is it 51 weeks go by? Now, an elephant, I believe, it takes a year and a half for them to have a little baby elephant. So he's sitting on his egg through the wind, through the winter, through the rain, through the snow. So one day, he is sitting on his egg in a tree, elephant in a tree, sitting on an egg, and Maisie comes by after her big trip. Let's hear what she said. All right, and who am I talking to now?
Maisie LaBird.
Now, Maisie, why did you do that to Horton?
Well, you know, I had to relax. I needed a break from everything, so I just decided to take a little break.
So you were the bad girl in the party, huh?
I mean, if that's what you want to call it, then I guess. I mean, you know.
Tell us what your name is.
Amari L. Thompson.
And this is your, how many shows?
This is my fourth year.
What did you play last year?
Last year I was the fairy godmother. Yeah. And then the year before that I was Marty. And then my first year I was Dorothy.
Well, I tell you what. I believe this is the best performance you've ever done.
Thank you.
As a matter of fact, I think this is the best performance they've ever done. And this is just the first night. ABIC, right?
Yes.
Always be in character. And what school are you going to?
Rocky River High School.
Rocky River, okay. And when do you graduate now?
2016.
Okay. And what do you want to be when you get out?
I want to be a singer and an actress. I want to have my own TV show and be a performer and kind of like Beyonce, but better.
Thank you. Hello, young man. Oh, I got the two little ones here. And now, that was, matter of fact, that was not Maisie singing, but I will find Maisie singing.
But that was the interview with the girl.
That was the interview with the girl.
But?
And I would like to, if I can find, I will find Maisie somewhere.
Right.
But I want to play one of the songs that I love from this show. I mean, this show, this song is really fabulous. It's called How Lucky You Are.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why do you cry a cloudy sky and empty purse? It's a crazy universe. My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you got this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.
Now, that was Abraham Smith as the Cat in the Hat. Now, everybody, that he is so good. I want to show you how diverse Abraham Smith is. Now, I was looking for the Maisie song, which I couldn't find. Yeah, maybe I labeled it wrong, but there's one part that I have to. Now, there's a part in the show where the Cat in the Hat, Gertrude, who's in love with Horton, Gertrude's a bird. And she only has just one little feather as a tail. And she can fly and fly all around. So she said, look, I have to do better. I got to get him, Norton, to notice me. So, and Maisie has all these beautiful feathers. She walks and chassés around, and everybody knows her. So she said, she goes to this doctor. And the doctor, who is also the Cat in the Hat, he said, no, you can't do this. So he said, you got to take these pills. So she takes these pills, and she eats the pills, and her tail starts growing. Oh, it grows. It's big and beautiful. But she can't fly now because the tail is so big. It's so heavy, she can't fly. So she said, look, this is ridiculous. I got to get rid of this tail. I can't stand it. So she goes back to the doctor in the end to tell the doctor to take the tail off. Okay, but here is
by the way, to let everybody know, this is the Gertrude McFuzz story of Dr.
Gertrude. And what happened?
There was a Horton tales. There are two Hortons, but this is the Gertrude.
Okay. There's two Hortons.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Horton here is a who, and Horton hatches an egg.
Two Horton. Right. Well,
some of all the separate books that they mashed together.
There's 15 of them here.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this portion that you're going to hear is Abraham Smith. His Cat in the Hat, when Gertrude goes to him for help. Now, this is all ad lib by Abraham Smith.
Give us a little bit of the Jamaican accent for us.
Oh, child, I'll give you the Jamaican accent real quick right now. There, Jim, don't kill it, don't hear it, don't yellow it.
Is that something you ad libbed, or did you, was that part of the script?
That was improvised. Most of that was improvised.
I mean, when did you improvise it? The first day of the show or what?
That little skit talk, that was improvised like on the spot. That was kind of thinking that up.
It was fabulous. Tell us your name.
Abraham Smith.
And Abraham, you played?
The Cat in the Hat.
The Cat in the Hat. And Abraham, tell us what school you're going to.
Going to Hopewell High School.
And what grade are you in?
Going to 10th grade.
Going to 8th grade? Oh, 10th grade.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So, but you're going to be back here next year?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. You're fabulous job. Fabulous job.
Okay. Now, again, that was not the right interview. But that was him. I thought I had it, but I didn't. So I have to read. But we're going to have part two. I just want to do one more song, and that is from Gertrude, where she's trying to get Horton to notice her.
Oh, man. That bird left the clover. Dropped somewhere inside. A huge patch of clovers. 100 miles wide. I'll find it or bust. I have to find my friends on this small speck of dust. Yes, clover, I'll buy clover. Buy clover with care. I'll listen and call. Are you there? Are you there? Are you there? Are you there?
to approach you, not to mention all the stamina to follow you across the hills and deserts. But I feel as if I'm ready to confess to you the feelings that I've hidden between diligence and labor. Behind the facade of your odd little next-door neighbor, my eyes are too small. I have very large feet, but I'm not very proud of my pitiful feet. But I've now got a tail, and that is something to see.
103?
Oh, notice me hoarding feather by feather. This is your next door neighbor calling. Notice me hoarding, hoarding together. We could be great. Oh, notice me hoarding, put down the clover. This is your next door neighbor calling. There's a new leaf, your neighbor's turned over.
Turned over, clover by clover.
Star Trek. I love the Star Trek First Class. But I'm not interested in seeing all the other stars. Star Trek is good. I'm not knocking Star Trek. It's very good. But I just don't have an interest in it. In it after I thought that one laid out everything for me. I love that one, and I don't feel the need to follow up on it.
Right.
Well,
there's no knock on the movie. I just have no interest in it. I saw what I needed to see in that one. I'm just satisfied. Maybe I feel if they can't keep up that standard or something, maybe that might be it. But I thought that was wonderful when they explained who everybody was and how they knew each other from childhood. And
you got something against
that.
Well, you know, the thing is that I thought the reference to everybody and Khan in the second one was good, and you notice he did not die. So if they're going to have a another one that explains, just like in the second Star Trek movie, in the movies, where Khan came back and he finally got rid of him. So they're going to have to do the same thing with this one. So that's another storyline already coming in. But before we get to it, I need to get to this one call. Everybody hold on to their seats for just a minute. I see, Randy, you've called back. That's good. I'm going to get to you. Just hold on. Right now, we have for our audience out there, everybody hold on just a minute, and if we can find this here. That I want. Okay, I got it here. And we have our next case is from our hospital association. It is Dr. Grace Leem reporting in.
You talk about the next case. Yeah, the next head case, right?
Yes. Head case. What's
okay,
the deal?
Okay, so, well, here's the deal. You know, I'm going to talk about healthcare. You know it's becoming more and more apparent, okay, first of all, that those screw-ups up in Raleigh, those clowns up in Raleigh, have no idea, or if they do, they don't care, have no idea how their legislature, the bills that they have passed are impacting and affecting North Carolinians. And I'm talking about majority white North Carolinians, okay? Not majority black, majority white North Carolinians. Because they have refused to accept that Medicaid fund, and now this has becoming every single day more and more and more apparent to me in my practice, because my practice has just almost quadrupled.
Can you just call me?
Now,
because
they refused to expand Medicaid, they refused the $15.5 billion from the federal government that would expand Medicaid in North Carolina. We have minimally 500,000 people that will be without insurance, you know, because they will not either A, not qualify for Medicaid when they ordinarily would qualify, or they would fall off the roll. Okay, that means if you divide 500,000 by 100 counties, you're averaging out maybe 5,000 more uninsured people in each county. I can assure you that in my county, Cabarrus, it's much more than that. And I know in Mecklenburg it's a lot more than that. But think about Scotland County that has a 17% unemployment rate. 17% unemployment rate, okay? Think about Richmond County that also has double-digit unemployment rate. Think about those counties. My practice, which I used to be able to handle my patients based on one day, a full day of clinical, and then the remainder of the day is just actually refilling prescriptions and doing kind of like, you know, spot work. We have to expand now to 3 days, full day, okay, and then the remainder of the time. We anticipate having to expand our hours to be, 5 days a week, if not 24/7, if that doesn't stop. This insanity doesn't stop. just yesterday, we took in five new patients, and I'm talking about people that were referred to us by the emergency room because they were using the ER as their primary care. Okay,
now,
people with blood pressure, sorry?
Are they going to prevent people from going to the emergency room if they don't have health insurance?
They're actually saying well, go to the ER for your health care.
Isn't that one of the reasons that they want to do that is because they want to close up all the smaller hospitals and have these major conglomerates take over all those hospitals?
You know, that may very well be one of their ulterior motives, but quite honestly, my motivation is simply this: that we can the motto, the mission statement of the free clinic is that we will break down the barriers to providing quality health care and pharmaceutical services to all the uninsured in Cabarrus County, because that's all I can deal with, Cabarrus County. And that's what we do. We break down the barriers. So these people that have been going to the emergency room for their health care, and they ran out of blood pressure medicine, so they go to the emergency room for it. You know how much it costs for an emergency room visit just for
I went to the emergency room February 15th. I just got a bill for the x-rays, for the medications, for the hospital visit. It came to $2,750. That is not including the doctor. That's a separate bill.
And doesn't include the CAT scan or whatever else you had done, right? Exactly.
Correct.
So these idiots are saying, well, these people don't have to pay anyway, so let them go to the ER. Listen, morons. This is what I want to say to these fools in Raleigh. Listen, morons. Yeah, you're right. The patient doesn't pay, but I pay because it comes out of my tax dollars. I pay.
Right.
And I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be picayune. I don't want to be selfish. You know, that's not it. I want to be able to use our dollar and stretch it the best possible way. If my $1 can cover six patients, then that's what I wanted to do. I don't want my $1 to cover one-sixth of a patient. You know?
Right.
That's what I want. That is exactly what I want. So anyway, we had five referrals from the ER yesterday. And one of them's blood pressure was 220 over 156.
Right.
220. I mean, you know, if he had stroked out, what it would have cost us in terms of medical care for this guy who did not have insurance and did not have any access to any insurance and any medical care at all, it would have cost us in the hundreds and thousands of dollars.
Right.
That's what it would have cost us. But these morons in Raleigh don't see it.
No. Well, no, they do see it, but they don't care. As I said to Dr. Ben Chavis last week and Randy Bowler, I said the Republican Party, not the Regressive Party, the Republican Party that we know of is dead. Their head has been cut off. And just like a snake, their body is still moving around, even though it doesn't have a head anymore. They are dead and they don't know it. And this is going to last maybe another 4 or 5 years, but then they will be finished. They will stop moving. So,
and
you know, you need to wait.
And I say to them, and I say to every single Republican that I know, and I know people who are Republicans, I say to them, how can you stand there and call yourself a true Christian when what you are doing is so anti what Jesus preached? And if you're not Christian, if you're Muslim, it's against what Allah preached. And if you're Buddhist, it's against what Buddha preached. It's against any religious prophet, what the teachings of any religious prophet. How can you stand there and claim to be a Christian and think you're going to have a place in heaven? Why? Because you go to church on Sunday and Bible study on Wednesday? No, buddy. Uh-uh. Maybe. No, that does not make you a Christian.
That's right.
You know?
We have the county executive committee meeting this Saturday. Are you going to be able to make it?
It's not. Oh, the Mecklenburg. The Mecklenburg right. County executive meeting. Yeah, at 9 o'clock in the morning, you said?
9 o'clock in the morning, yes. Okay. And then we're going to have a forum of all the mayoral candidates.
Okay. I'm going to do my best to be there. I mean, but this Saturday I also have the Cabarrus County Democratic Party has this big fundraiser going on, you know, yard sale, barbecue, you know, all that stuff.
Okay.
I'll be stretched in, but, I'll do my best to get there.
Okay. Well, we have another segment we're going to get to, and I'm glad you called in. And what is the number that he can get a hold of you if people want to know what the heck is going on with the free clinics? How can they get a hold of you?
They can call. I'll give you the number of the free clinic. Okay. They can call 704-782-0650.
Okay, very
that
good.
Is the number of the free clinic. Mm-hmm.
That is wonderful. That's wonderful. And as always, we are ready to hear what you have to say. You're our doctor in the house.
Thank you,
Dr. Grace. Hey, how is Joe?
How is Joe's doing much better, thank you, and the baby is watching him.
Yeah, well, tell Joe to have another one on me.
I'll do it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Our doctor in the house. Okay, Gaff, we are back with you. That was another interruption we had, but she's always on the show. She's got in a little late. Well, I just want to read this, Gaff, and I just want to know how you feel about this. And this has been in the papers. Alex Rodriguez has been suspended through the end of 2014 after Major League Baseball investigation determined that he used and possessed testosterone and human growth hormones over multiple years and for attempting to hide his violation and for a course of conduct intended to obstruct, frustrate the office of the commissioner. Baseball announced Monday afternoon a 211-game suspension, which is the longest in pro sports history and will likely be the end of A-Rod's career because he is 38 years old, and this 211-game suspension is actually a death sentence.
That's another way to say goodbye.
That's right. Now, we have talked about this before, George, when Michael Jordan was playing around with coming back and playing baseball because he was an all-star in college. And, you know, he wasn't 38 years old. And we were saying that, you know, the one thing, this is not basketball and this is not football. When you leave baseball, even if you are young, unless you are a great ball player like a Ted Williams or a Gil Hodges, because they left to go into the service. Gil Hodges went into World War II, and Ted Williams went as a fighter pilot in the Marines in the Korean War. But the thing is, you don't come back to play baseball. And at 38, with two hip replacements or two hip surgeries and two knee surgeries, you ain't coming back. So this is a death sentence for Alex Rodriguez. And that's the reason why he wants to come back and play, because this will be his last season. And the only way for him to come back and play was to fight it. Because if he would have taken the sentence, he never would have ever played a baseball game again. So this is actually Alex Rodriguez's goodbye to Major League Baseball. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, the thing is, first of all, I hate Barry Bonds. I don't hate Rodriguez. The thing that bothers me about Rodriguez is he was always overrated. I saw once a thing about a show about how Jackie Jensen had played for the Boston Red Sox, how he got to the big leagues. What happened was when Jackie was in high school, he was a light-hitting shortstop. They sent a scout out to see a guy on his team who was a tremendous home run hitter. This is high school. This guy was hitting the ball a mile, and he had a lot of home runs, and they sent the scout out to see this player. And what happened was the scout stayed there for like a week and a half, and then he turned in his report. And he said, this guy is wonderful if the game is out of reach. He said, if the game is on the line, he's no good to you at all, the player that they, the home run hitter. They said he never gets a hit or does anything when the game is on the, when there's any pressure. If there's no pressure, if he's up in the first inning, he might hit a home run. If he's up later in the game and the game is out of reach one way or the other, if you're winning by a ton already or if you're losing by a ton already, this guy will hit a home run. But if the game is on the line, he's useless. Meanwhile, he said, I noticed this little shortstop. He couldn't hit a home run if his life depended on it, but he keeps the game going. He'll steal a base. He'll bunt. He'll hit a single. He'll do something to keep the game going and help his team win. And I said, well, Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter is that shortstop type guy. And Alex Rodriguez standing next to Derek Jeter just kept getting smaller and smaller. Alex Rodriguez cannot function under pressure. And look at his career. He played for Seattle. He played for Texas when they weren't winning the game. And therefore, he was free. Nobody ever saw the team doing anything. He just could come up and hit with no pressure on him because they weren't expected to win, and they didn't win. So everything you're saying about his situation is right. He's finished. He can't take two in the air. He can't take 211 games. He'll never be back. He's fighting for it because they said, he can make $7 million just because if he can delay this year's suspension. He makes $7.5 million. Whoever gave him these contracts was insanity. It was insanity for Texas to do it, and then it was insanity for the Yankees to do it.
Well, if he plays the rest of this year, he makes $34 million. What's $7.5 million?
I thought it was $7.5 million he stood to make.
No. He's gonna make $34 million.
For the remaining games.
That's right. He's gonna lose $60 million. So he's going to get, because this year he was hurt under, and he's got to get paid for that. So he's going to get $7 million because he is playing. So that's another $7 million, which is a total of $34 million. I don't know how the moron that made this out, but you're absolutely correct. Now, I'm telling you
that. That's the problem, though.
That's right.
Sports today. That's exactly what people talk about.
Of course.
That's why the ticket prices are so high and nobody can go to a game.
Now, listen. I am looking at, right now, a book that Mr. Gass sent me, and it's called Black Baseball, A History of African Americans and the National Game. And who is on the cover with his arms like Popeye and his head like the...
Is there a needle sticking out?
And a head like a Gargantua with a cross earring ready to hit the ball or hit somebody is Barry Bonds. Now, I was reading about Barry Bonds last night till 5 o'clock in the morning, 4:45. Now, I am having a little change in my feeling about Barry Bonds and A-Rod.
Let me just give you
my feelings. Barry Bonds played for 22 years. Barry Bonds, if we go by, has 762 home runs. Barry Bonds has an on-base percentage of .444. He has a batting average of .298. Okay? He has more walks than Babe Ruth and Ted Williams combined. They did not want to face Barry Bonds, whether he had steroids sticking out of his ears or not. The problem is, Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer before 2001. No person ever hit more home runs and stole more bases more than 30-30 more times than Barry Bonds. Nobody. Barry Bonds has a Barry Bonds had 2,935 hits in his career, almost 3,000 hits. Barry Bonds struck out 1,539 times. So half the time, okay, he might have struck out. But Barry Bonds walked 2,558 times. Now, the statistics, he has won the MVP seven times. And you got to remember, okay, Barry Bonds was hitting 35, 45 home runs. He hit 44 home runs in 1998. Okay? He hit 36 home runs in 1992. He hit 34 home runs in 1982. Barry Bonds was a consistent hitter, but did not start hitting these home runs. Let me go back. I missed that again. He hit 93. He hit 46 home runs, okay? And in 98, he hit 42 home runs. 97, he hit 40 home runs. 98, okay, he hit 37 home runs. 99, he hit 34 home runs. And in 2000, he hit 49 home runs. That is the year before he went to 73. Now, all the writing about Barry Bonds before 2001 was that Barry, statistic-wise, we're talking about, not the writing from the writers. And I'm going to get to that. Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer in every position he played in the outfield, because he played them all. Gold glove in them all. Can't say that about Socia, and you can't say that about McGuire. Can't say that about Babe Ruth. Can't say that about Ted Williams. So there's a lot of, can't say that about Stan Musial. And they play the outfield and first base. So before we get to 2000 and the steroid use, Barry Bonds was a great ball player. Now, reading the story, it seems why Barry Bonds became Mr. Nasty, but only to the reporters. And he says, and this is what other people say, he got this way because how the reporters treated his father, because his father became a drunk. And that's the reason why Barry Bonds left the Major League Baseball, because he started drinking. And the reporters ripped him apart. So he decided that he never was going to talk to a reporter. Never, ever. So this is the handshake or the fight between Barry Bonds and not reporting to the press. So now we go and we see Barry Bonds, who is a major league, a major league ball player. In 2000, he had 49 home runs. He had 106 RBIs. He had 11 stolen bases. And he had 117 walks. And he only had 77 strikeouts. Okay? That's all. That's all he had. And, you know, he played in 143 games. And he had 480 bats, and he had 129 runs driven in, okay, with 147 hits. He did not need to do this the next year. But the reason he did was self-indulgent because of what McGuire and Social did that year. He thought, and this is what he's trying to say in the article, that he thought that this would take him out of the limelight. So selfishly, he started doing it. So now we can look at Barry Bonds from 2001 up, is when these, when his head started getting larger and his speech started getting larger. So how, I'm going to ask you, Gaff, what do you, or how do you contrast Barry Bonds to before 2000 and 2001, after 2001? How are you feeling about him before 2000?
Before he started, he was a fine baseball player. He was one of the best baseball players. I have no argument with him before he started cheating. His qualifications, everything, he was on track to be one of the great players.
No, he was a great player then.
He was on track to be one of the great players.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
But Mike, and he makes a great point, before he started cheating, it doesn't matter that he was a great player and had great talent. Eventually, somewhere along the way, whether it's corking the bat or, you know, this or that or the other, or drugs, he started cheating. So
okay.
It's imbalanced.
All right. Now, here's the thing.
Because all those people who don't cheat.
They say that, and you see now, the difference, if we're going to compare the difference, compare and contrast, Barry Bonds from Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez needed to dope because he was not a great ball player until he started doping. And he was doping since high school, Alex Rodriguez. So, you know, if we're going to take, you know, bad and better, I got to say Barry Bonds is 100% better than Alex Rodriguez. Because, Alex, you know, Barry Bonds, you know, why he did it, because he thought that he didn't want to be second best to McGuire and Socha, which is completely nonsensical. And then I had other people tell me, well, he was a wife beater. Forget that. There's so many ball players. If we charge ball players for being wife beaters, there wouldn't be anybody in the Hall of Fame. So what I'm saying is that you forget about what he did outside of the baseball field. He's using that for an excuse. Is he using that for self-indulgence, why he started doing this? Because he wanted to be better than those two who did not last? I mean, what do you think about that, George?
Well, again, you know, Judas was a wonderful disciple before he turned Jesus in. I mean, all wonderful that he was failing down the thing and he was a wonderful baseball player. You know, a lot of guys are wonderful drivers until they go out the road, get drunk, and kill five people. It's your entire career. It's not all the last 2 years. It's the entire career. He screwed up. I can't give him a pass. Now, when I talk to Randy, I wish Randy was on the line because Randy always convinces me that Bonds is a victim. And every time I listen to Randy, and then as soon as I stop listening to him, I said, there's something wrong with this pitcher. And what can I tell you? I just can't. What bothers me is these guys who cheat, I don't care about their motivation. It bothers me that they get to be, they pass Hank Aaron, Frank Robinson, Willie Mays. How do they pass? Another thing I can't understand is this. Barry Bonds cheated. How does his record become the record? I'm with this guy, Bryce, whoever it is, Bryce, or what's his name, or whoever it is that's trying to say that the home run record is still Maris. It's still, who passed Maris? Didn't somebody get 62?
Hank Aaron.
No, 62, huh?
Oh, well, your 62 was
Keisha. 61 was Maris. Did somebody pass right. him?
Yeah. The next guy to pass him was Socha.
That doesn't count either. I mean, I just don't see when baseball says, well, they cheated, but we can't change the record book. I don't know. He cheated. And if he got caught later, he still cheated. I don't know. I got problems with this. These guys, I'm telling you now, just anything they do to get rid of them all is wonderful. But Barnes is sailing along. Nobody has an argument that Barnes was on great track until he just went. And then the other thing was his cheating was so outlandish, I can't believe he didn't want to get caught.
Well, you see, the thing is, you know, you're just a sail by guys.
I mean, he's got more home runs at the All-Star break than Babe Ruth had in his entire career. It's something wrong with this pitcher.
Well, yeah, but see, now we're talking about, supposedly the live ball era. He played in the dead ball era and the live ball era of Babe Ruth. But, you know, they still were, the Babe Ruth was using a 49-ounce bat. I mean, the biggest bat that they use in baseball now is 34 ounces. And why? Because the ball has more cork in it, and the back has more spring in it. I mean, you have to look at it. Remember, you remember these days, nobody hit the ball out of Yankee Stadium. Matt Mantle, I think, did he? I don't know. But that center field was 464 feet. Every stadium was brought in because, you know, games back in the 60s and 70s and even part of the 80s, the 50s, 60s, 70s, part of the 80s, it was, even the 80s, it was 3-2, the score was. Maybe 5-2. 5-0. I mean, the Dodgers just beat St. Louis the other day 13-4. And 13 runs is not outrageous. If not the abnormal, because the owners are the ones to blame for all of this. That's why I had a completely different version of this now, reading last night for 2.5 hours about this. These owners need to be hung by their thumbs. I mean, they now want to make critical decisions on sending guys, giving them the death penalty by not having them play anymore, when they're the ones that made it happen because they brought in the fences so there will be more runs scored. Baseball is not about
they want to make money.
They want to make it, baseball is because it's too slow. Well, who decided it was too slow? I mean, who's the moron that decided that the game is too slow? You can't speed up baseball. Baseball is not a timed sport like football and basketball. It's a different, and like soccer, it is nothing like those sports. It is directive, and it is focused.
I agree. It is absolutely the slowest,
right,
most boring sport.
No. See, here's the thing. People who did not grow up under baseball think it's that way. You will never find a New Yorker that says that. New Yorker, that's
baseball from the first pitch and stuff. It's all about strategy. I'm telling you, it starts off with, and that's what you, baseball, people who want a fast game, basketball or hockey or something, baseball is not a fast game, but baseball requires more skill than I think than any other game. And you can't cover for a guy. You can cover for a guy in basketball. You could be terrible. I could put you out there with four good guys. They can cover you. You can't cover a guy in baseball.
That's right. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And see, the thing is that it's a strategy before the game starts. Because what happens, the manager looks at who's pitching on that mound and says, well, you know, this guy, we looked it up. He's got an 0-50 batting average against this guy. He ain't playing today. Gone. I don't care if he's the All-Star. He's going to be a pinch hitter maybe, but he ain't playing. So the thing is go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things, everything is strategy. When you, like you said, the starting pitcher. Do you want your best pitcher to go up against their best pitcher, or do you want to put your best pitcher up against their worst pitcher and guarantee yourself at least that one victory? Things
absolutely.
Like that. I mean, the game hasn't even started. This is going to be a week before the game. You're already getting a pitching rotation and things like that. Baseball is just, you know, I mean, if you want action, baseball may not be the greatest game for you. But if you want, I mean, everything in there has got some kind of, it's going to do something. It could be even for the next game. You can leave a guy in there who's getting his brains beat out because you just don't want to go to your bullpen for this game. You wrote this game off. And you're going to save your bullpen for the next game when you got a chance to win instead of trying to limit. If they score 13 this game, so what? You've lost the game, and you might let your bullpen take a beating. But, you know, one guy out there take a beating and save the rest of your bullpen so that the other guys won't get used to them. You know, it's all strategy.
What team was it that brought in one of their catchers to pitch the final inning?
I think it was Detroit.
He got the three outs. So, but, you know, the problem is, though, that they're playing 162 games. Now, and then they're traveling to all these different ballparks. You don't have that in basketball or football. I don't care how beaten you are on the field, you're not doing it day in and day out. Yes, you could be crippled in one game. Yes, you might be out for 2 weeks. In baseball, you've got to sit down for 15 days if you get hurt. Got to. Automatic. 15 days. And then that's the DL list. So the thing is that when you – and we're talking about Barry Bonds versus Rodriguez. Barry Bonds, as you said, will hit more home runs in the first, second, or third inning when it's a nothing-nothing score or when the Yankees are up 5-1. You can rely on Alex Rodriguez to hit the ball in the seats. When the game is on the line, you cannot rely on Alex Rodriguez. The Yankees go to the man, Mr. Jeter. That's who they go to. They get them out of the hole. But when Barry Bonds was in the game, when he was playing, they went to Barry Bonds. Do you know what? I mean, this is something else I read last night. They even walked Barry Bonds with the bases loaded because they did not want to face him. They let a run come in with the bases loaded. Now, that never happened with Ruth, DiMaggio, Musial, Williams, or anybody.
Including Barry Bonds when he was drug free.
That's right. So the thing is that's how dangerous. And the year he hit, I believe it was, I'm trying to remember here. It was 1 year when he hit 45 home runs. He had only, was it 45 home runs? He only had 58 strikeouts. So the thing is, but he had 232 walks. The steroids did not make you hit the curveball. The steroids, as they were talking about it with Alex Rodriguez made you from warning track power to in the seats power. It did not make you a faster runner. It did not help you hit the curveball. And it did not help you with the average. But the steroids never helped Rodriguez with an average. I mean, Barry Bonds has the year he had. I'm talking about he had the 45 home runs and the 58 walks. He had a .341 batting average. So, as much as we say about Barry Bonds, I mean, he hit .370 in 2002 with 46 home runs and 110 RBI and 198 base on balls with only 47 strikeouts. So the thing is that, was that when he wasn't taking drugs? Did he stop taking a drug in 2004? Because 2001 is when he hit the 73 home run.
That gets to the heart of the whole question.
Yeah.
It simply becomes, though, regardless of, because throughout this, you're quoting stats and you're saying, you know, this guy is a natural hitter. This guy
was a natural hitter.
I'm just saying. This guy, you know, drugs affected him positively. This one, not so well. You know, blah, 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 blah. The end result is
Do you want an honest game, or do you just want?
No, no, you're absolutely correct. Game. You know, so the, I was a little torn between that.
Yeah, it's just cheating.
But,
it's cheating. It's cheating.
But when
this
you know,
happens to be a biological
they,
form of
cheating. They threw out 13 ball players. One of them is this guy Ryan Braun, who won the MVP the year that I believe, and I'm saying it because I'm not saying it because I'm a Dodger fan, that Matt Kemp should have won the MVP. He was on drugs. They did not test him to the following. Oh, no, they did test him, but they didn't get the results back that they confirm was biogenics.
Right.
So, to me, if they're going to go this far, they need to start taking away awards.
But this is the problem, and this is why you get into that thing of, you know, they're out to make money. It's a business. They don't care about the
owners.
Yes. And so they've allowed this to go so long because they were making money, because they were getting these monstrous people that could hit monstrous hits every single time, guaranteed.
No, but not a hit. Because this don't make you a better hit.
No, but this is the thing. They've let it go so long and so pervasive that now you're faced with the problem. And this is the exact reason why it's been so long in stopping it. Now you're faced with the prospect of basically asterisking or getting away or doing away with entire decades worth of
That's
records.
True.
And,
right.
And
I understand that.
You know, you're erasing entire years of work and entire careers of people. But this is a created problem, and they've got to address it one way or the other. Either they just go, okay, everything goes, or you've got to have an honest game.
Well, in the wrap here, and we need to talk about this some more because we need to get Randy on here. I know he was out because he was getting his car taken care of, so that's probably why he had problems because I wanted to do the show from his house. So maybe we could do that next week, and we'll get Randy on. So I don't know what your time is, Gaff, but you can look it up and see if we can do next Friday. I'm going to speak to Randy here because he was off today. See if we can do it from his house, but I still need to get by there and see all his memorabilia. But of the two, who has been worse as far as you're concerned between Rodriguez and Barry Bonds?
To me, Bonds is always the worst because, again, if a kid cheats, as I said before, if a kid cheats in my class, the bell rings and he walks out, with, you know, that's fine. When he cheats and wants to come up and ask me to mark his paper and write a letter of recommendation to Howard University, I got a problem with that. Bonds swam in this thing. He just – Rodriguez was even – he was doing it, and they're all terrible. But, I mean, I can't – Bonds is the poster boy. Jesse – like a lot of guys rob banks. Jesse James is the poster boy for bank robbery. That's it. He became the poster boy. And once you're the poster boy, you got to take the poster boy down first. You know, you can't go and get the guy who's on the corner. It's like the guy told me, he said, Timmy McVeigh wasn't a bad guy. He never committed a crime until what? Until he blew up the Oklahoma courthouse and killed 168 people, including 42 children. Until he did that, he was a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way I feel about Bonds. He was wonderful, and then he went completely mad and became the poster boy and gloried in it. When you got your head is bigger than your waistline, he's the worst. Anybody is just second fiddle to him. That's it. So I believe
I'm
going after the poster boy.
I am getting over the last day or so, I've been getting a little softer on Barry as compared to Alex Rodriguez because he's been taking it
because he was great before he did this. That's right. I mean, I understand he was great before he did this. Nobody had an argument with that. He was a Hall of Famer before he did this. But again, Timothy McVeigh was fine before he blew up the Oklahoma courthouse.
Well, I don't think Timothy McVeigh was fine before that.
He was a soldier and a patriot and a true American.
Anyway, I want to thank you, Gav. Let's see if we can get together next week with Mr. Randy James and talk about this because we're going to have some more information next week. And
beyond that, we need to get together and have a
We're going to do a show on the characters from Marvel and DC Comics.
Yeah, all these.
So I'll let you know. Okay, Gav? And we are going to sign off with another tune from Suzigo the Musical. And tell everybody have a great, 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 great Friday and Saturday and Sunday. A great weekend.
Enjoy it.
Now that's that.
And he said, and he said, and he said, and he said. He said all that day, and he guessed the egg won. He said all that night through a terrible storm. I'm cold and I'm wet, and I'm catching the flu. Oh, Maisie, please hurry, I've got to say poo. Oh, Maisie, please hurry, I've got to say poo.
Gotcha. Listen, I brought you a scarf.
Oh, thank you, Gertrude. Have you heard from Maisie?
She sent a postcard from Palm Beach.
Palm Beach? Gertrude, what if she never comes back?
Don't worry, she will. Horton, notice anything different?
Yeah, it's getting cooler. I can't leave this nest. No, I meant what I said. This egg might get frozen. The who's to be dead? I couldn't say no when I heard Maisie beg. Now I'm stuck between a defective and an incubating egg. Help! 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 Help!